Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Return now to a question that continues to confound and even anger many people across the country as governments shut down most activities in an effort to contain the spread of the coronavirus. What is considered essential? Of course, some jobs, businesses, or services are recognized as essential across the board. First responders, hospital and urgent care personnel, grocery store workers, and pharmacies. But in the absence of a national stay-at-home order, individual states and cities have been making their own decisions, and some jurisdictions have chosen to define what's essential in a way that has sparked controversy and even lawsuits. Texas, for example, is one of a handful of states that have sought to label most abortion services as non-essential. Meanwhile, in California, it's up to each county to decide whether gun shops should be allowed to remain open. And in Arizona, barbershops and hair salons seem to be on the essential business list until the governor there reversed course. To help us understand all this, we've called on three reporters who are covering these stories. Tara Haley is a senior contributor for Forbes. Thomas Peel is an investigative reporter for the Bay Area News Group. And Brenna Goth is a staff correspondent at Bloomberg Government. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Sure. You're very welcome.
Tara Haley, we will start with you since you've been covering the abortion ban in Texas. I understand that this ban was not originally in Governor Greg Abbott's executive order. So how did this come about?
The primary rationale has been that halting all abortions will preserve PPE, which stands for personal protection equipment. So that includes things such as masks and gloves and face shields. Governor Abbott didn't specify anything about abortion in the actual order. Then the Attorney General, Ken Paxton, has a long, long history of being very opposed to abortion rights and looks for opportunities to involve himself in making decisions about it. So he, the very next day after Governor Abbott's order, he released a statement stating that that included abortion. And it was very unclear at first which abortions that included. It was assumed to be only surgical abortions. So all surgical abortions in Texas were put on hold as soon as Paxton's order came out. Then a few days later, on that following Friday, the medical abortions, abortions which use medication for termination of pregnancy, those abortions were also halted. And it wasn't really clear what the justification for those was, since those don't use PPE beyond gloves for an ultrasound.
So I was going to ask you about that.
It was a little bit confusion.
That's my question is, what is the argument? Because the argument around surgical abortions is it's not a treatment of a disease, and therefore these items, these scarce items like, or increasingly scarce items like personal protective equipment needed to be reserved for urgent matters. But that doesn't apply to medically induced
medical abortions.
Abortion. So what was the rationale?
It's not clear why they can justify it when the PPE that would be used for abortions is much less than what would be used for prenatal care and for birth services, especially if someone has a C-section. So I think that's part of what they're going to be debating in the courts. The question is what happens while it's working its way through the courts. And at first it was allowed to proceed, and then the Fifth Circuit of Appeals reversed that. So the justifications, I think, are still being worked out.
I was going to ask you about this because yesterday on this program, we spoke to New York's Attorney General, Letitia James, and she is one of, I think at this point, it's a dozen and a half attorneys general from other states who are supporting legal challenges to the Texas order. And what's the status of that challenge now? Or what are some of the arguments that people have been making here?
The biggest argument is that abortion is a time-sensitive procedure. You cannot be pregnant indefinitely. There is an actual time limit to when you can start to, when you can no longer seek an abortion. In Texas, that's 20 weeks. After 20 weeks, you can no longer seek an abortion. And obviously, if you wait too long, then you are going to be giving birth. So it's not like you can delay it, like you could a hip replacement or a thyroid surgery. It is something that actually depends on time-sensitive needs. And in the midst of this, we don't know how long the social distancing and the need for PPE will go on. So to delay it indefinitely is a big concern. I think Ohio has taken a different approach that takes that into account. Ohio, it was very unclear for a while what they were allowing, what they were not. And then it was finally clarified in one of the recent lawsuits where they said that surgical abortions should be delayed until they can't be delayed. So basically, if it's reaching a point where the woman is entering the window where she would no longer be able to have an abortion, then she is allowed to have it. So that's a little bit more thoughtful in terms of the need for PPE versus the time-sensitive nature of an abortion.
Okay, Thomas Peel, over to you. Let's talk about California. There, Governor Gavin Newsom did not explicitly restrict gun stores as a non-essential business, but he's leaving it up to the sheriffs from each county to determine whether they should remain open. Could you just talk a little bit about the decision-making there?
Sure. This began when six counties in the Bay Area issued the nation's first shelter-in-place orders in mid-March. And that came, of course, with a list of businesses that they deemed essential that could stay open: grocery stores, pharmacies, gas stations, things people really need to survive even as they stay home. But gun stores were not mentioned. No businesses were explicitly mentioned as being ordered to close. And some gun stores stayed open. And there's been a well-documented now national run on guns in the last month. The FBI data is showing sales spiking. And in Los Angeles, the sheriff there, Alex Villanueva, said very publicly he didn't want to run on gun stores. He didn't want people who were not familiar with firearms buying them in a panic at this moment. Mm-hmm. And he ended up flip-flopping a couple of times. Los Angeles County's top lawyer issued an opinion that deemed gun shops essential. The sheriff backed off. Next day, Governor Gavin Newsom, who was, you know, a very active proponent of gun control, was asked at a press conference about the issue, and he punted it. He kicked it back to the sheriff, saying that he would leave the question of whether gun shops were essential to the sheriffs in each individual county.
Do you have a sense of why the governor has been reluctant to make a statewide decision on this?
You know, I think it's purely political. Newsom signed 15 gun control measures last November. But I think in this instance, a large part of the state is rural. The majority of counties in California are red. Many of them are, of course, very low population. But this was just something that seemed like a bit of a third rail issue that the governor didn't want to touch.
So there are multiple lawsuits going on right now challenging the gun store closures, as I understand it. I understand the NRA has already has started litigation to challenge the closures in those areas where they are closed. What are the arguments?
They're simply saying that any government action to stop a citizen from being able to buy a firearm is a violation of the Second Amendment.
So they're not arguing that guns are essential. They're arguing that they are protected no matter what the circumstance.
Yes, they're arguing that local governments have no constitutional authority to stop the sale of firearms.
Hmm. So, and let's turn to Brenna Goth now. You've been reporting on Arizona Governor Doug Ducey's decisions, one in particular to let personal hygiene services stay open. And many took that to mean barbershops and beauty salons. But on Friday, the governor narrowed down this list and closed these businesses. So what brought about the change?
Right. So Governor Ducey has faced a fair amount of backlash in Arizona from both mayors and some industry workers. And the concern from mayors was that, you know, these are businesses where people are getting very close to their clients. So there's really no way that someone can cut your hair from 6 feet away, which is the recommended social distancing guideline. So one mayor took action on her own to actually close these businesses. Others didn't go quite as far, but said that they really disagreed with this decision.
I was just going to ask, did the governor say why he exempted those businesses in the first place?
That is something that Governor Ducey was pressed on many times in press conferences, and I would say we never got a really clear answer. Basically, what we heard when we asked about this is that Governor Ducey would talk a little bit more about the overall executive order and would say that he was following what he believed were the best practices and that he believed that every business that was staying open could do so safely. But you did see a lot of people press him on that and say, you're telling people to socially distance. At the same time, there's no way that that can be done in these types of businesses.
I understand that golf courses are still open in Arizona. Is that still the case, Brenna?
That is still the case. We did receive clarification on Friday that Ducey ordered barbershops, salons, tattoo parlors, those types of businesses to close, but golf courses do remain open. That has been something that mayors around the state originally did criticize Ducey for, and I do think many of them still have concerns. But in response to that, Governor Ducey has said that golf and other outdoor activities are something that people should be doing in order to stay healthy during at least a month of being told to stay at home, and that these activities, it's a lot easier to socially distance because you're in large outdoor spaces, and presumably it's very possible to stay 6 feet away from people, would be his response to that.
That was Brenna Goth of Bloomberg Government. We also heard from Thomas Peel of the Bay Area News Group and Tara Haley of Forbes. Thank you all so much for your reporting. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
As we know, the coronavirus has forced many people to work at home, and that's if they're lucky. A lot of people have been laid off or furloughed. But for people who are able to work from home, there's growing demand from their employers to give them access to their webcams so the employers can basically keep tabs on them and ensure that their employees are working. So there's a number of different software options for it. One of them is referred to as Sneak. And according to Business Insider, signups have increased tenfold in the past few weeks. Okay. So the software lets people adjust a setting on their webcam so they can be photographed every 1 or 5 minutes, depending on how frequently they want their image to be updated, or in this case, how frequently their boss wants to be updated. Okay. So you as an employee would have to allow this feature, but it's not like you really have a choice if your boss or your employer is telling you that you need to do this. So, you know, here's a quick example of what some of these images would look like if an employer was taking this like little snapshot every 1 minute or every 5 minutes, right? Just to ensure you're at your computer, you're doing your job. God forbid you take a bathroom break. Maybe you get a snack, which, by the way, these days, snacks have been saving me. Like, you know, it's sometimes you just need to step away from the news. Get yourself a Nutty Bar and just relax. Yes. But don't do that. Don't do that if your boss is spying on you, apparently. It's disgusting.
Well, since I run the company here, I would allow for Nutty Bar breaks, to be fair. Okay. If a manager came up to me and said, hey, Cenk, I got a great idea. For my division in the company, since people are working from home and I don't trust them and they're not adults and I made all the wrong hiring decisions in hiring them, I'm going to spy in on them and take pictures of them every 5 minutes. I'd be like, first of all, no, you're not, you pervert. Second of all, then what are you spending your whole day on? Like, I would question how the manager is using their time. You're spending your whole day spying in on employees, why don't you get your job done? Look, you have to hold people accountable to the tasks that they have and the responsibilities that they have. That's work 101, right? So nobody's being soft here. But you don't need to actually physically look into their rooms and, are they working? What are they doing? Are they on the wrong sites? Oh, get out of our lives, man. Jesus Christ.
Right. And it adds additional stress in an already stressful time for a lot of people. But in addition to that, I mean, look, I feel like a lot of people who work in management in this country, a lot of the employers, they don't understand the importance of making your employees feel valued and trusted. And so on the few occasions where I felt like I was micromanaged, not by you, Cenk, but there have been cases, right? My reaction is not what people would hope for, right? An employer would hope for. When I'm being micromanaged, I start, you know, not wanting to do my job because I get defiant. And it's like, what, you don't trust me to do my job? I mean, the work speaks for itself, to your point, right? And becoming more and more intrusive in people's personal lives. Our home is supposed to be our castle. It's supposed to be our safe space. And I don't agree with allowing people or being pressured or coerced into allowing people who have power over you to get a sneak peek on what happens in your home. It's just unacceptable. And look, I don't know what the right advice is to employees, because people, you know, especially right now, are stressed out about finances. They need to work, and people feel privileged to be able to earn a paycheck right now. But at some point, employees need to take a stand, and this goes way too far.
Yeah, so you should, if you're in that awful situation and you can't get another job, we obviously understand that, at least put a post-it note on your computer to remind yourself that your creeper boss is watching you at all times. Because people are going to forget, and then you're going to have awful, awful pictures out there. This is a disaster waiting to happen.
That is often the case in the system of white supremacy. Disaster waiting to happen. The Cows, Gus T. Renegade, in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, April 10, 2020. So I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. This is not a spectator broadcast. That would be the case under any circumstance, particularly given the special nature of these times in the workplace. For folks, if you are working, things, I suspect, I would hope, are different than they were at the beginning of 2020. If you are going into the office, or if you're being allowed to remain at home, I know some people have had all kinds of disruptions where they're not working at all, or are working reduced schedules all around the world. This sort of chaos. So lots to try to process and figure out. Might even require some adjustments to counter racist code. If you haven't had to make any adjustments to your code, you are functioning the exact same way. Maybe you wash your hands a little more frequently or have a holster of sanitizer or a mask or whatever it is. But if you have not had to make too many adjustments to what you would normally do during the normal course of your workday, we should definitely hear from you. Because as I've said, being able to be consistent, you don't have to make a whole lot of adjustments. You can kind of function, perform, do the same things, say the same things. If you're able to remain that consistent, in my view, that means you probably have a pretty solid code. So you can certainly share if you've had to make some adjustments for these historic days. Share what have you had to switch around a little bit, given, you know, what's happening, whether it's regards to social distancing or whatever it is. Let us know. The number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Few things to share, then we'll get to folks who dialed in. I think for workplace racism, over the years, I have said consistently, being an entrepreneur, fantastic, self-employed as they call it, all of that is grand, might even make things a little better, a little more manageable in terms of you being able to maybe minimize some of the direct abuse that you would encounter if you are working directly for a race soldier. Or even some victims, you know, if you're able to be self-employed, you might have a little bit more control over some aspects of your work and career. So it can be super beneficial. doesn't mean you're going to eliminate racism, white supremacy, doesn't mean that racists are still, or I'll put it this way, you can be self-employed. Your boss is still racist man, racist woman, racist child, directly, indirectly. Very important to remember that. Often, you know, talk about business licenses and different things that directly or indirectly whites have to sign, whites require us to have, even if you're going to be self-employed frequently. This situation with the coronavirus would be another situation. You could be self-employed during this time in a variety of different fields. They were talking about salons and whatever. You could have an automotive shop or whatever it is, restaurant. All of that is shut down because we say so. And that's that. Racists can exert lots of influence over what we do. They do exert lots of influence over what we do in all areas of people activity. Very important to be mindful of that. This is more on the unplanned side of how they can exert force and control. But when they were talking about those lists of which establishments or which types of businesses get classified as essential, they didn't mention liquor stores, but I know here in Washington State, oh yeah, liquor stores, essential. I know that's the case in a lot of other areas too. When they were talking about the governor, Governor Newsom, you know, he flip-flopped and what's essential and all that. They did the same thing here in Washington State. You know, Governor Inslee, what's the list? They had a list here. They put it in the newspaper. These are the essential businesses. And they went right down the, oh yeah, liquor store. Okay. Gas station, grocery store, weed dispenser. Okay. I have not seen one of these lists that was put together by a black person. Not one. Governor Newsom, Governor Inslee, none of them. If anybody, you know, can point to a desk where, you know, I don't know, Neely Fuller Jr., Scottie Reed, anybody, shout to Mr. Reed, any of these folks where they are in charge, where, you know, Mr. Trump is calling one of them and saying, oh, man, what are we closing in North Carolina, Mr. Reed? What's closed in D.C.? I know nobody called me. They didn't even ask my opinion about what is an essential business. What do you think needs to remain open? Very important to be honest about who is in charge. Let's see. The reports, in addition to the essential businesses and that causing lots of confusion. Incidentally, there were a lot of whites who have been defiant. You know, race soldiers, I'm not a nigger. You know, you're not going to push me around and tell me I got to be closed. You had whole cities and gun shops who filed lawsuits and we're not closing and this is absurd and all the rest of it, especially down in South Carolina. Lots of that. The second report from the Young Turks, where they were talking about the spying component. Now, some people are able to work from home. In fact, I can even give a quick pause because there was a report. There are about a billion reports since last Friday talking about the impact of the coronavirus on black people in the states. Racism, white supremacy, medical apartheid. In one of those reports where they were offering a theory about all of this, one component came back to workplace racism, which I did think was important, and some of our listeners did as well. This is from the LA Times, a crisis within a crisis. Black Americans face higher rates of coronavirus deaths. I'm not going to read the whole report, but the work component. At first, COVID-19 did not seem to discriminate. The patients who walked into Dr. Uche Blackstock's urgent care clinics in Brooklyn, New York, without coughs and with coughs and fevers, were white, black, and brown. But in the last few weeks, she has witnessed a notable shift. Fewer white people have showed up, while there has been a dramatic uptick in the number of black and brown patients. Many are low-income service workers and essential workers, delivery drivers, police officers, subway workers, corrections officers, who do not have the luxury of working from home. As I said, some of our listeners said, oh yeah, that is critical. Some of them even said, yeah, I am designated as an essential worker. I am not allowed to remain home. We got new parents you know, who just had children this year. We don't care. I want to hear about all of that. You know, you coming out and getting the Chinese virus. And you are an essential employee. Be here at, you know, 8 a.m. or whatever time you're supposed to be here. We might have goggles. We might not. And we're still having Taco Tuesday. So be here and, you know, we'll have the hot sauce ready. I've heard that from a number of listeners where it's just been like, wow, not even an option. If I thought, hey, I just want to stay at home, do this on the computer and, you know, have some hot cocoa and watch President Trump tell me what to do each day. Nah. Anywho, but with the folks who are able to stay at home, that other component, because I also heard that from some other listeners, that they didn't say that their white employer was doing the video spying, which you heard from the Young Turks, where they're doing, I guess, a screenshot every 5 minutes or 1 minute or some video, taking a video stream so that they can see what you're doing. But I have heard folks say that their employer was doing some sort of like check-in on like an hourly basis or something to see what you're doing and get a status check. What if you get, let's break down your last 60 minutes. I mean, woo. I don't know about you all, but that would be more than enough for me to be like, you know, I'd rather be back at the work site as opposed to being here. Like if I'm going to be harassed in my house, in my residence, I don't want to be harassed like that on the phone. I'm not interested in having screenshots if any folks, if you are having to tolerate all of that during this, and particularly imagine having that sprung on you, right? So you sign up, you're doing your job. You have not done any working from home before, so this has never been an issue, and, you know, you got to have a computer, and let me see you. So now you go home, and it's, do what? A screenshot? What? Like, man, what am I, do I now have to, like, dress up to come sit at my desk in my house? Like, I don't know if my children are at home. Do I want my children in this screenshot if they, you know, walk by or what have you? Do I have to be in a locked room and let them, like, don't come in here while I'm working? I don't want, you know, my. If anybody is having to navigate all of that, definitely, you know, would appreciate hearing an update about that. The number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Get to some of the folks who wrote in. Think I neglected. If you have commentary, observations, suggestions to share, you don't feel comfortable with calling in, or you're not able to call in, you can always drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Folks who wrote in, about a week ago, the owner of the company I work for called for a brief meeting addressing guidelines for working from home. There it is, working from home due to COVID-19. It was held on a Friday, a day in which I don't typically work, but I came in order to remain informed. Bravo. I was about 15 minutes early for the meeting. Let me say it again. I was about 15 minutes early for the meeting. So I sat down just outside of my office to check work email. The owner, a white man, passed with a construction worker, a non-white Mexican man, and entered the office besides me to meet with the vice president, the owner's brother. Nepotism. The non-white Mexican man left the office and was almost out of the building when the owner started calling for him to come back. It was clear he didn't hear him, so I got up to call him just before he left. As we're walking back to the owner, was about to address my coworker, but quickly turned to me and yelled, "And what the fuck are you doing? Standing around doing nothing. Get to work." Direct quote. I've been with the company for over 5 years, and I am well aware that the owner is prone to berate employees embarrassing to admit, but I hadn't experienced it up to this point because I rarely dealt with him directly. Taken aback, my only response was, I was only there for the meeting and I would like to know when it would start. The owner walked away saying nothing, and his brother turned to me and stated that the owner was under a lot of stress due to COVID-19 and this being an essential business. I said nothing, and I'm not sure how much my face, because I had a mask on. I'm not sure how much my face revealed because I had a mask on. I am the only non-white black person currently working at the office. Absolutely disgusting. Thank you so much for sharing. Wow. Just disgusting. The first thing that I would say is I think that will probably be used as a convenient excuse for a lot of abuse. The New York Times, many outlets all over the world have reported an astronomical rise in domestic abuse throughout the past month or whatever since we've been going through all this. No surprise, I've shared a few of them. We'll have another report on that tomorrow for the compensatory call-in. No surprise at all. But in my view, that's just an excuse. I'm stressed. You know, I got furrowed, laid off, let go, or I got reduced hours or whatever it is. Or, you know, I'm working from home and they're taking screenshots of me every five minutes. I'm trying to do, you know, coke and all the rest of it. And they're taking shots and I'm stressed. I don't know what to do. You know, and you messed this up, so I got to go upside your head a couple times. Like, it's probably be a whole lot of lame excuses for that sort of thing. First time, last time, probably in the workplace too. People yelling and cursing because he said this fella, this race soldier, likes to do this anyway. Way before the Chinese, he said he'd been with the company for 5 years. This fella likes to yell at and scream at people. Probably, and he doesn't have a whole lot of black people, so it's not like you can say, well, we got a diverse environment and we have lots of colored folks around here and we do Watermelon Wednesdays, or at least we did before the virus. It's not like you can say that. He said he's the only black person there. And then you come up, what the F are you doing standing around here? What type of company is this? Is this a bar? Are we doing shots off of people's navels and things? Like, where are we working at? Is this a professional setting? I'm sure they have something in the policy and procedure about decorum. Like, I'm sure you couldn't even go to someone who is not a superior, but on your same level, and just talk to them that kind of way, or even using that sort of language. Absolutely absurd. I mean, just practicing racism. For those type of exchanges, it's jarring. You know, we say all the time, like, you know, not to be surprised and expect things. But, you know, if you don't normally see this person, I don't normally have contacts. So it's like, I don't really have a code, right, in mind in terms of dealing. I might know a few things about it, but we don't normally have contact. And then it's out of the blue. Like, I'm just here. I'm here early, in fact. I'm a good employee. I don't normally even work on this day. I'm just coming in to make sure that I am informed, do my job well. And I'm being talked to this way. Not, oh, man, thank you so much. You've been here for a half decade and you're here on time through this crisis. Man, appreciate you. Stay away from those chitlins. You know, you all got diabetes. Should have slipped a little, you know, racist humor in there for it all. And no. Yelling, berating, that sort of thing. I guess number one, keeping your calm. I guess that would be huge. Keeping your calm. Because I know for a lot of folks, it's jarring. Like I said, to be, you're there, you're checking email, you're not, I'm just waiting for the meeting. And somebody comes and says something to you. I mean, for a lot of folks, it would just be instinct. Who the F are you talking to? What did you say, crack? I mean, anything. Like, what? What is going on here? So that's why I say it's so important to keep your composure. If you decide to say nothing, if you decide to respond at all, he even was able to get back with a question. I would like to know, when is the meeting going to start? Lovely. Get back to the question. I'm just trying to get information about the meeting. Do you know when it's going to start? Okay. Definitely put that down in the workplace journal, and I can only say, you know, I would expect that, as I said, there'll probably be a lot more of that. I would not tolerate that, and in fact, I would even be preemptive. Like, If you see that happening in the workplace to other people, it happens to you, I would bring that up. Everybody on the planet is stressed right now. Anybody here, I don't care what your situation is. If you have people in your family die, that's happening all over the world. So nobody is special. That does not give anybody the, oh, I'm so stressed about the Rona. I don't have masks and they ran out of toilet paper. That's everybody. Nobody has toilet paper or yeast or anything else. Get it together. That is not an excuse to come in here and practice racism. And I'm just going to yell at the nigger employees for the day. And then we'll have a good cry together. And, oh, I just feel so bad. Isn't it terrible? What are we? Nah, get out of here with that. But I would be preemptive and say that I know we're all under a lot of stress. That doesn't mean we need to relax our professionalism in the workplace, does it? Question Lane. Professionalism in the workplace. Professionalism in the workplace. And you can even bring that back into safety, because once you get into people being unprofessional in the workplace, that ends up compromising safety. We can't have people arguing and yelling and things in the office. Mask might come off, forget to sanitize. Definitely. We get to arguing and yelling. We get spit flying and we're not worried about social distancing. Now, come on. Professionalism in the workplace, especially under these times when people are stressed and angry and all the rest of it. That's not an excuse. I'd bring that up exactly. Professionalism in the workplace. Email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have thoughts or suggestions on how you would deal with that situation, like anytime you get something like that, that's just, wow, this person I don't even really know like that and all the rest of it. Great job keeping your composure. That is always grand. But if anybody has suggestions on how they would, you know, suggest dealing with that, feel free. Dial in. I would appreciate hearing some of those myself. If we have other folks, if you would like to share on your situation, how all of this is impacting your work environment. Are you working from home? Are race soldiers, are they spying on you? Do you have to do screenshots and all the rest? Are they just harassing you on your phone every 5 minutes to make sure that you're not, you know, watching YouTube videos and cooking all day while you are at home? The number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If we have any entrepreneurs, you're self-employed, you could also let us know. Did you get shut down? Did you get classified as an essential business, or were you ordered to shutter? That sort of thing. That'd be good to hear as well. Let's see. We'll hit the lines. Let's see. First few folks who dialed in with a hand up. Line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Non-Clemson grad. Greedy. I just said folks in South Carolina were rowdy. Said this is the tradition of Benjamin Pitchfork Tillman. You think you're fitting to tell me that I can't go and open my gun store, my smoothie shack, or whatever it is? You got another thing coming. We got a long history of being of defiant white men in South Carolina. Call it Dylan Roof, non-Clemson grad.
Hello, Justin. Hello to everyone as well, too. I hope you are all doing your best for Friday under a system of racism and white supremacy. As for the gun situation, me and my wife, we do have guns, and of course, we have bullets as well, too. We were considering working on a concealed carry permit, and of course, the zombie apocalypse started. Nevertheless, we personally have not been going to any gun stores or anything like that, anywhere near the shooting range. Me personally, I started working from home last week. And as far as I can tell personally, because where I work, it was a very seamless transition. It hasn't been very hard. I brought in my personal computer to my employer. They put a remote desktop onto my computer, and now I'm able to access my work computer through my personal home computer. And I'm able to continue working. And as such, I have not had any issues with that. Of course, I'm able to communicate with the people at my at work, and of course, communicate through my phone, because my work phone is now forwarded to my personal home phone if anyone needs to call. But I really don't expect any calls because I got IP with transportation. But there has been a couple of interesting things. So, for example, there was a white female who worked in one of the departments. I'm sorry, in a different department, but in the same branch of different branch of planning. And right as this whole situation happened, this was interesting. You know, she was one of the first people in the entire department to work from home because she had just got a daughter. I think her daughter's less than 1 year old. And her husband was also furloughed because of the situation, but she got to go home and start working from home immediately and, you know, be home with her less than 1 year old daughter. And we started working from home about a week ago. And right as the week was ending last week, she revealed that she already had, she had resigned her position and that she was moving on to a new job. So what I found interesting about that was that, look at that. There's a white person right there getting a job in the zombie apocalypse. Good for her. Obviously, South Carolina was one of the last states to put in place a work-at-home order, right? I'm not sure if anyone's been reading some of the articles coming out from maybe the New York Times or maybe the Washington Post, but they say places around the country, for example, that have, you know, the least or the most activity when it comes to driving. I live in the most populous county in the state of South Carolina, and we are one of the most active states, not just in the state, but also in the entire country. You know, when you usually drive on interstate highways, you usually see signs like, you know, go home, stay home, things like that. But me also, I go outside, I go for a walk, I also go running to get my exercise in. I'm still allowed to do that as far as I can tell. Or, you know, go out and run errands, like going to the grocery store to get whatever you need, you know, you're eating and stuff like that. And as far as I can tell, it doesn't really look that much different other than people are wearing masks and maybe a couple are wearing gloves. Personally, the gloves freak me out the most because, you know, people who wear gloves, at least in my experience, tend not to wash their hands. Also, me and my wife, we've talked about this a couple times. We also teach ballroom dance. That is our business. And because of the shutdown of non-essential businesses, we are currently not teaching dance lessons. Matter of fact, we were working with two couples. One couple had just started, and they'll come back when this whole fiasco ends, whenever that is. But it's an interracial couple, so cowbell. And then there was another couple, also another interracial couple, but they're getting married, and they were supposed to be getting married towards the end of May. And they just recently sent out a postponement for their wedding, and also a postponement on their dance lessons as well too, and their choreography. And it's a very interesting situation as well too, because, you know, depending on what kind of business you're in and stuff like that. For example, me and my wife were talking about the idea that, you know, maybe we might have to refund these people their money. We're in a position to do so. If we need to, not a big deal to us, you know. But they're postponing, so we're going to assume that they're going to finish up the lesson. And of course, we're happily willing and then teach them whatever, you know, we're able to legally open back up our business as well, too. As for being spied on by my employer, as far as I know, I don't think I see my employer doing that. But I think you gave some good advice. At that point, you know what, I might as well go ahead and risk my life. I'll go back to work in the office, rather than get, spied on through my own personal computer. And as for the person who was, when you were reading some of the emails and stuff like that, that was a very interesting situation. I had no idea how to deal with that one. That one was just a very interesting situation. Of course, I wish that person the best in whatever they choose to do in that particular situation. And I'll end the call right there.
Much obliged, non-Clemson grad. Did you have any, I guess, apprehension about them putting this software on your personal computer?
Not personally, but I do understand what you're getting as well, too. Your employer potentially has put something on your computer. I was talking to my mother throughout these last couple of weeks. She's working from home as well too, but she was on medical leave this past month and just started working back up this past week. And then I had to bring in my personal computer to get, for the remote desktop. while my mother, her employer, they were basically able to maybe send her a link through an email, and she was able to go from there without her having to bring in her desktop. You know, maybe a desktop is a little bit harder to bring in than a laptop. But as of right now, I'm not having any it is worrisome, but I don't feel like I'm being intruded upon, at least not yet. And my immediate department, which there are four people, and of course I believe there is roughly 15 people in the entire Department of Planning, but in my immediate Department of Transportation, we're constantly communicating, whether it be through email, whether it be through text message, or whether it be through phone calls, and we have not had any issues yet. And it's really, you know, this is pretty funny. Before this whole process of working from home even started, you know, the two females in the department in a work email talked about, you know, don't be mad if, you know, they come to the computer and you see them. I don't know, I've seen because you're not doing this kind of meeting, and they don't have any makeup on. And I just thought that was very interesting. You know, was that really appropriate? I was really wondering, was that appropriate email work conversation over the thing, stuff like that? But when they make jokes like that, I just simply don't respond.
Hey, man, like, don't be mad if they come to work on the computer and they don't have makeup on. Like, what? Why would I be concerned if they have makeup on? Like, what? Are they wearing? Yeah. Like, are they wearing makeup for me? Like, is that? Like, come on. Just like, come on. No response needed. Woo. Much obliged. Non-Clemson grad.
Oh, I do want to add one more thing. Sorry to interrupt you, Gus. I do want to add one more thing. Sorry to interrupt you. About a month ago, a black male friend of mine who I was talking to for last year, we're talking about opening up our consulting firm and incorporating at the end of this year. He got laid off from his planning job in a different part, just outside of the Charlotte area, right? So, ironically enough, he did tell me that the reason he got laid off from his position because he was having trouble with a white female, and basically the director of his department said it was much easier to get rid of him than it was to get rid of her. And, so that was very interesting. But I also told him, since he got laid off, and since the white female who, you know, with the baby in my department where I work, you know, since she's leaving, I said, you know what, man, if you're still looking for another job before we incorporate, or, you know, as we incorporate, here's the plug. At least try to apply for the job if you can. So I like to think, you know, at least in that moment, maybe he may be able to benefit from that situation.
Black self-respect. Sad for the circumstances, but that's awesome. If you can, you know, a little help out and he can get a job, that's awesome to be able to help out someone like that. But that is, they said, it's easier to get rid of him than her. System of racism, white supremacy. The Negro is always disposable. White women, even in the zombie apocalypse, the white women and pregnant, they got all these articles talking about discrimination. That's what they call it, against pregnant moms. Oh, my goodness. White mothers catch it so hard. And that's why Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump. And white, they hate white mothers. You know, it's just, oh, it's disgraceful. Zombie apocalypse. I just had a baby and I'm still padding my resume. Like, get out of here. Like, I don't know what you're, and I'm getting my corona check. Like, back down, white woman. 2020, it's my time. And I'm voting for Trump again in November. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Jay, in St. Louis. Had reports in St. Louis, they said.
Oh.
All of the people in St. Louis to die from the so-called Chinese virus are black. Good to hear from you, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Good evening. I have actually relocated, so now I am Jay in College Station, Texas. My family is still in St. Louis, and you had posed a question about entrepreneurs. My mother is an entrepreneur. She's been an entrepreneur her whole life. My grandmother is an entrepreneur as well. My mother was shut down. She does hair. She's in cosmetology. And she had to sneak in through the back door and take a very small amount of customers, customers she's not used to taking. So she's exercising other options right now because of the law changes with unemployment. My grandmother's small business had to shut down. She's exercising other options with grants to help with, keep up with payroll and things of that nature. In St. Louis right now, they have a stay-at-home order. Us here in Texas, our stay-at-home orders are being administrated on a county-by-county basis, or a city-by-city basis, rather. So the small city I'm in, Bryan, right outside of College Station, actually, they have a type of stay-at-home order, but it's nowhere near as strict as it is in Houston, for example, which I'm just outside of. I also wanted to give an update about in-home surveillance. I think things have been a little bit easier for me to adjust because I was practicing social distancing anyway. Since relocating and taking a position as a graduate student at the university here, I have not gone to any university functions. I have not showed up in the office unless it was absolutely mandatory. And outside of showing up for our graduate seminar class, my peers do not see me outside of the library. And in that context, I make sure to utilize the single student study rooms. That way I cannot be bothered. I'm on the quiet floor of the study room. So that's how I've been making it through these last two semesters. So it was very easy for me to just come back home. It didn't disrupt my social life at all. But it is a bit of an inconvenience at times having to still attend class online because the professors will, one professor in particular, the other two, I'm taking three classes. Two of the professors have been very lenient. They're not really pressuring us too much about completing assignments in the same manner or at the same speed. We do have final projects coming up. They all expect those to be completed on time. But one professor in particular, he is very strident right now. To him, this is no emergency at all. Every time we have a meeting for class, he's talking about the Great Plague or the Black Plague in Italy and how that's a real virus and this is nothing. So he doesn't see why we can't just continue to read what we were going to read and do what we were going to do anyway. dealing with that aspect of it has been a little bit difficult trying to work. I'm also a father, an attempted parent, so trying to make sure I still have a healthy relationship with my children has been very difficult because I'm no longer able to use the library spaces that I'm accustomed to. So these last 3 weeks have been very hard adjusting. Luckily, we had extra computers for my children, so they've been able to do their schoolwork, and we kind of synchronize our times together, and I'll take advantage of the time when they're doing schoolwork to do what I need to do outside of zooming in for class. What else? Also, I have had to make adjustments, major adjustments. But I think these have been positive adjustments in my own estimation so far. So I have been keeping up with the show. I haven't been able to call in, but I've been listening to the archives a lot. I made it a focus this year, at the beginning of this year, to focus on my health. And that was part of my own social distancing from the office, from my fellow graduate students, and not seeing them. I made it my goal to see their faces once a week when I have to. No going to the bar, something I never did anyway. I do not use drugs. So, you know, I rejected all the invitations to the bar, all the invitations for pizza. But I also started fasting this year. a lot more listening to you, Gus, and taking in information about better food to eat. And as a result of that, I've been able to lose about 30 pounds. So with this change from the coronavirus pandemic, I'm not able to fast as long anymore because I've been at home exercising more vigorously. So that's just a small change I had to make that I'm still kind of adjusting and getting used to again. So I'm working on that. I feel like we're kind of in a fortunate situation because other graduate students have had to have been just fired completely and just sent home. So luckily at the university I'm at, they're not just firing the graduate students and sending us home and canceling the classes, but they are still making us teach the classes online and work with the undergraduate students online. And that's been very difficult given the different situations the undergraduates I teach find themselves in, having no internet and things like that, attending all these mandatory seminars at 9 a.m. in the morning, and the professors asking you to turn the camera on so they can see you. But it also, there's an upshot to this or a positive aspect of this as well for me, because I don't have to physically be around the university professors and the racist students, racist and insecure students there anymore. So it has helped out a lot, not having to have them in my personal space. I'm trying to think of anything else I wanted to update. I think that was about it. But I think we're adjusting here just fine. I've just been adding in extra hour or two to my exercise schedule now that I don't have to leave in the mornings. I don't have to commute. And I was already social distancing. So this has been overall good for me because I like being around the people I live with, the people I love. So that's all I wanted to share, and I'll keep listening.
Wow, what an update. Formerly in St. Louis, now Jay in College Station. Congratulations, 30 pounds. That is, wow, that's like a little person. Like you lost like a first grader. Like, that's amazing. Like, congratulations. Yeah, he said he's working more vigorously now that he has more free time. So, congratulations. Like, that's what we've been talking about. And Dr. Lathan, that was why we were reading Dr. Africa's book and all the rest. So, absolutely, that's what they're talking about right now with all this with the Chinese virus, you know. Got to take care of yourself, eat well, don't want to have all that unnecessary weight. It is not good for us. But wow, like sounds like you made your adjustments, minimizing contact. If that's something you're already doing, then social distancing shouldn't be that much of a big deal. Not a big transition. Sobriety would be best. Maybe we can all skip the invites to the bars and, you know, try to drink a little more water. Love the codification, having a schedule. This is, you know, we're not just going to be hanging out willy-nilly with, you know, colleagues and students and all the rest of it. See them when I need to, and boom, let's go about getting work done efficiently. Efficiently, I love it. I guess just real quick, you said that oh, my goodness, before I get there, your mother... Man, I'm so sorry to hear about that. I thought that would be the case. Entrepreneurs, as they call them in general, but a lot of black people that are self-employed, like, man, why just one white person to come out and say, nope, not doing any more of that, and that's that. That is the system of white supremacy. That's why I say that regularly. This would just be one illustration of how, nope, you being an entrepreneur doesn't really solve your problems. We have to replace the whole system. But you said that the stay-at-home order, whatever the order is called in Texas, that it's more stringent in Houston. And I perked up. I think there are a few more dark folks in Houston than in College Station or Austin, some of the other areas. I guess if you could just a few quick details about the nature of the whatever they have in Houston, lockdown or whatever it is?
Yes. So they declared a state of emergency. They ordered social distancing and the shutting down of essential businesses at least about 10 days before the city of Bryan, that I lived in, officially declared this and advised all of the undergraduate students who didn't have a permanent residence here to go back home for the rest of the semester. So they had a huge spike in cases very early. Dallas as well. They're projecting a shutdown time that's going to be longer than most of the other areas in the state. So, yes, it's been very interesting to see how those two centers of economic activity, Dallas and Houston in particular, and I'm right in between both of them, almost equal distance between both, how they go about sorting this out. And indeed, it is a lot more Black people. There are almost no Black people in the city I am in.
Fascinating. That would be one, just remembering... James Loewen, Sundown Towns, where he talked about the little pockets right around Dallas Park. Hyde Park is one. I forgot the. I think Jerry Jones has a house in one. He owns the Dallas Cowboys. But those little areas around Dallas, like now, what is their response like? And then Dallas proper, what is their response like? Like that would be an interesting one to look at as well, because they don't have. I know they have like a Black person in like Hyde Park and the other one. So it'd be, yeah, interesting to check that out too. Much obliged, Jay in College Station. Keep up the outstanding work. Again, high praise. That is spectacular. 30 pounds. Awesome. Keep up the great work. Health is super input. That's counter racism right there. That's counter racism right there. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, observations to share, again, if folks have any suggestions on how you would deal with, I think he said it was the president of the company comes in. That's for you doing out here, standing around doing nothing. If you have any thoughts on how you would deal with that, a white man, very powerful. I think either the most powerful white person at the place that you work or the second most powerful white person at the place where you work comes out and yells this at you in the middle of, you know, God and everyone. And you're just standing there. Matter of fact, you are there on a day where you normally don't work. You're there 15 minutes early to be at a meeting that you don't necessarily have to be at, just so that you can be properly informed. So we have total context. And then this happens. If folks have any thoughts on how you would, you know, try to navigate that situation as best you can, how you'd respond, feel free. If you have your own situation, that is fine as well.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to everyone else. With the office insult, I know there's a high percentage that the retired firefighter would mess that up, but I'm thinking that there is a constructive code behind that, because there is, logically speaking, a constructive code with everything. And I would say with that particular instance, it would be an immediate, something like an immediate statement, something like, well, you put it in the term of a question. If you're not going to get a constructive response out of me, sir, by using that type of language towards me, you know, in a very calm voice, something of that nature. And, you know, after a statement like that, they can say whatever they want in response to it. But it's not going to assist them in what they are doing. I don't care if it's the boss or the person who open the door in the morning. But that's what I would suggest, you know, in my thoughts, that I would suggest to someone who is confronted with that type of offense. Does that make sense?
Oh, to me it does. Yes, sir.
Yeah. And it has to be immediate. It has to be immediate and as clear, I was about to say loud, but as clear as he or anyone else who's around can hear it. You know, at the same tone, at the same volume that he gave his statement, made a statement, he will get that statement. He will get that statement that I suggested back, or something similar to it. And you know, with no anger or anything involved, but very serious. I would say very serious, straight eye to eye contact with that person, and more than likely, the person would kind of like lower their voice. It would be a pause. It would be a long pause in whatever reply that they would have, you know, something of that nature. You know, I've had similar experiences, but I can't, I know I have, but I just can't recall it exactly. That's it.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. It's very, very common. So I'm sure a lot of folks have had that sort of experience, the loud, berating white person. And particularly, he said that this white fella, he loves to do this. That's how I get my excitement, my joy. I get to come into the office, pick out someone to yell and curse at, humiliate them in front of it. What are you doing over there, you numbskull, idiot? Love it. Makes me feel like a man. Just being clear about that. In fact, when a retired firefighter was speaking, it reminded me of the autobiography of Malcolm X we read in the book club. But specifically, he was talking about Elijah Muhammad. And he said Elijah Muhammad was talking about his work experience. And he said he got on a job and he told the fella, white man, he said, don't curse me. You know, do not talk to me that way. If you have to fire me or whatever it is, but do not curse at me. I do not, you know, permit people to talk to me that way. I'm going to be professional in the way that I treat you and talk to you. And that's the same thing that I want in return, that I'm not going to, you know, work in an environment or tolerate somebody cursing and talking to me in that manner. And in fact, that can be even something that is preemptive and letting people know if you go on a job and you see that that sort of thing happens, because he said he had seen this sort of thing, letting folks know. Hey, I do not do that. If that means that I need to get another job, no problem. But do not speak to me, or exactly, retired firefighter, that's another way that you can put it. You will not get a constructive response from me if you speak to me. And that man, just what he said, I'm going to give 100% eye contact. It's no giggling and ha ha ha, give me five, my brother. You will not get a constructive response if you speak to me in that manner. I would probably slow that one down just a tick, and eye contact. In fact, I've heard somebody else. I was thinking Walter. It was Deion Sanders. He said the same thing. He said he had a white coach, and because you know those football coaches, they love that. And he said, I forgot, I'm going to have to go back and see if I can find it, but he said the same thing. He said he went and told him, he said, yeah, you're not going to be able to do it. I think he said he had saw the guy, he had just done that. And get out there and get that phone, you know, get something. Whoa, you have forgotten who I am. You are not going to get a crush. That's almost when he said verbatim, it was prime time. I'll have to look it up. I'll find it and I'll put it online. But whatever version of that you can come up with, I think that is excellent, especially if you see that in advance, that you got that type of verbal, even if it's a black person, let them know, because I've seen that you are not going to talk to me that way. You're not going to get a constructive response, however it needs to be worded, but same thing, try to be preemptive, because sometimes I have seen where that will work. where the person, they'll respect that. Okay, I will, you know, do this with FL. Okay, gotcha. Just in terms of, because I've seen that. I think some folks, they'll say, they know not to play with that person. I would let that be known. I'm not one of those folks that you're going to play with. If that means that I don't need to work here anymore, no problem. You can be preemptive about that. Other folks, much obliged. Retired firefighter. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Not for spectators, make sure. Remind folks, if you're working from home, working, they messed your schedule around, which they have done with a whole lot of people, and messing schedules over and all the rest of it. Definitely not a time to spectate. And again, this will probably be historic. I think they're already compiling, like some of the white institutions, they're compiling like coronavirus archives to document all of this, because, you know, they document. He was talking about the Black Plague, they call it. Bubonic plague. They, you know, document and put that in the records. All this will be documented so we can archive, you know, what we experienced within the context of white supremacy, racism. Before I get to other folks who dialed in, other folks who wrote, I guess I'll give out the email again. UntilJustice@gmail.com if you are not able to dial in. So this person writes in, good evening, Gus. Some changes have occurred at my place of employment, such as different start times for different employees and attempts to avoid too many people being in the building at a certain time together. Management has provided us with cleaning materials to clean our work areas daily, as well as gloves and hand sanitizer. Bravo, a lot of places have not done that. One supervisor said, flat out, even if it gets as bad as New York, we aren't shutting down. Wow. What do you all make? Liquor? Like what? Bullets? What kind of factory is this here? Wow. What type of authority do you have? Like, if the governor says we're shutting down, are you defying the governor? Like, man, that might even be a statement to put in the workplace journal. Like, who we like? How power? Like, if you is this the janitor saying this? You know, like retired firefighter says, is this the concierge at the front of the building, or is this the vice president who's saying this? Like, that might be noteworthy, depending on, you know, how all this evolves. Continuing. Oh, you said it was a supervisor. I put that in the workplace journal. We are considered essential, I guess, so they gave us this paper to show enforcement officials if we're ever questioned by them. I would like to see one of those. I have talked to a few people who have them, but I haven't seen them. Yeah, if anybody, like, if it's got any identifying information, like, you can, you know, scramble that part out if it's got like your address or picture. Like, I just would like to see what it says. Like, is this something that, you know, a 17-year-old, a 15-year-old could go online with a word processor and crank out in 5 minutes? Like, does this look official? Like, what is it? What exactly does this document say? If anybody has one, you could even read it. In fact, that would work. That would work. Anyway, continuing. I lost my place. Okay, good. I've noted a lot of chippiness amongst me. See, that's what I said. Everybody is stressed, or a lot of people are. At least they'll lie and say that they're stressed. They don't have toilet paper and all the rest of it. That is not an excuse for stressed about the Rona. I'm stressed. Now I got to come in and curse out all the niggers. Now I got to come in and curse out all the employees because I'm stressed. No, that is not social distancing. It would be maximized. Like, no, don't think you're gonna come in here and be rowdy with me just because you're mad and you had to wait 5 hours in line at the grocery store. I've noticed a lot of chippiness amongst management and staff alike. There have been a lot more disagreements over small things, I'm assuming due to all of what's going on. Within the past week, there have been two incidents where food has been brought in for the staff, which I found staggering. Are you serious? They are still having Taco Tuesday. Are you serious? Anyway, I don't know where this person is, but like I said, this I've been saying the same thing. This is when I would get A+ because I wouldn't have to change anything. I said all this before the Rona. No eating at the workplace. I would not trust. These are the same people who come in and are cursing you out left and right and, "Coon, get over there," and, "What the hell are you doing over there?" And, "Rah, rah, rah." "Oh, I baked apple pie while I was at home. Would you..." Get out of here. Like, and you got the cooties too. Like, get out of here. Like, no, I do not want... And if I worked in a spot, if it had a lot of non-white people, I would seriously consider asking, like, is this hygienic? Like, should we be doing this at this time? Like, McDonald's isn't even inviting people in to have food. Like, come on. They got food handlers permits and what have you. Come on. Should we be doing this right now? And then I would try and nudge if we had non-white people there that I cared about at all. I would try and nudge to see if we could keep that in place, that we are no longer doing potluck dinners and bringing in food and all that nonsense. Like, as Mr. Fuller says, some of this we should have got rid of to begin with, handshakes and all the rest of it. Next. Staggering. They bring in food. The first incident occurred last week. The first incident occurred last weekend when pizza was brought into the workplace for the staff as an appreciation for us continuing to work throughout this epidemic. How about a raise? I had not a slice of pizza and didn't bother to go near the small area where most of my coworkers forgot what was going on and just partook in the festivities. I couldn't believe management allowed it. Someone posted the pictures of the event and the mayor of the city contacted me. That's so embarrassing. Come on. And that's why I said people fuss at black people. Oh, black people aren't taking it serious. This is a report. I'm playing on the compensatory call in tomorrow. They said the same thing. That's the problem. Black people didn't take it serious and making rumors saying that they were immune and all the rest. In comparison to who? Like, what are you talking about? So the mayor has to call for the pizza party. Someone posted pictures of the event, and the mayor of the city contacted my job about it and later made a public statement regarding establishments not adhering to the social distancing policies. That's so embarrassing. Currently in place. And even after that, later this week, someone brought in donuts. Isn't that what I say all the time? Pizza. And then they sit around and say obesity might be related to COVID-19. It looks like if you got a little too much tubbiness, you might have some problem. Isn't that what they say? And then we got to have Donut Friday, Pizza Tuesday. Yes, yes. Eat as many chicken wings as you can. Yes, this is our appreciation. And we're not going to get you a raise. We're not going to get laptops so you can work from home. But we'll get you some greasy pizza, see if we can get your cholesterol up a little bit. Add an extra pound on to you. Let's see. So they brought in donuts, and I observed a white man with underlying health issues say, "I guess I'll get the Rona." He had it as a direct quote. Yes, the donut was there. He has, come on, he has pictures of the donut. I cannot believe it. I cannot believe it. I don't know what to say. This is one component Dr. Africa talked about. That right there. None of that. You get raised and think, oh, yeah, this is cool. This is normal. We come in, have our donuts right on. No big deal. Yum, yum, yum. And it's addictive. Yes. Yes. Even under circumstances where it's like, wow, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. I don't know. And they got all the donuts together, right? So, I mean, people just going, maybe you get your gloves on and you go get your donut. I don't know how that works, but I mean, Jesus Christ. I wouldn't want to do this anyway. No Rona, no Chinese virus, none of that. Like, it could be January 2019. I'd be saying the exact same thing. Some of these habits needed to go anyway. No eating in the workplace. You shouldn't be eating donuts anyway. But if you like donuts, get your own donuts before or after work. You do not need to be salivating Pavlov's dog experiment just because they bring in food to work. That's even after all this is done. Same code. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing. That's so embarrassing. Imagine that. I work at a job. We got social distancing policies around the world. Restaurants closed around the world. We have pizza day at work and are posting the photos on Instagram like it's, you know, a party. It's no big deal. And the mayor calls to fuss at us and go back on television. I would be humiliated. Like, oh my God, that's so embarrassing. Over pizza? Like, come on. Let's see. Other folks. folks are if you're spectating, if things are going that well, you're not having any difficulties or problems or what have you, feel free to invest. You can hit the website racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. Maybe everybody here has spectacular, flawless codes for their work environment, and everyone has behaved on the job. They're not doing pizza day, donut day, or anything else. Things are going smashing thus far. I hope it continues for as long as this chaos is upon us. We will be here tomorrow. Make sure I get that in as well. Compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We will review what has transpired over the last 7 days, try to make sense of all of this. The other programs being more active, you just have to check for updates for times for broadcasts after Saturday. We should be on, and hopefully we'll have our Global Sunday Talk on Racism next Sunday, so we can check back in with Cal's listeners in different parts of the world to see, you know, what their observations, thoughts are about a month into all of this. And again, remind folks, we had a Cal's listener in China who did predict about a month ago black people in the United States specifically were going to have a very tough time with this virus, and it was very detailed why he predicted, and some of it was just pizza, donuts, and all of the poison that racists dump on us and call it food. Let's see. Other folks with us, if you have observations, comments to share, feel free.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I've been looking through my email list of reports, and I know there's been some I hadn't shared. So some of these took place before the reduced scheduling or having to reduce staff. This first one is I was participating as a witness in a marriage ceremony. So we have it to where we have, if the couple doesn't have any witnesses or doesn't have a party of people to be in the ceremony room or whatever, they'll provide 2 witnesses from the staff in the records department. So I was in the ceremony, and the top assistant supervisor, a white woman, she was the other witness. So it was me and her, her and I, whatnot. So once the ceremony ended, we have to where we have to sign the marriage license as a witness so it can become an official document. So she goes first, right? She signs the document. And I'm standing there waiting for the pen, and she puts the pen back in the cup. That is racist, okay? Because any other time when I've been a witness with another one of my coworkers, they will hand me the pen, white or non-white. So this time she just puts it in the cup. So, you know, I know she saw him standing there. So I go for the pen, and then I, you know, I sign my name or whatever. My next one is this kind of somewhat similar because this was a visual I got. Okay. Now I was about to go do the courier route upstairs to the judge's office, and this is an act of racism because I couldn't hear what was being said because the door is closed. Now, picture this. You see 3 people in the office, so it's a glass window. So you can't hear what's going on, but you can see who's in there. So it's 3 people in there. It's the supervisor, that same assistant supervisor that was a witness, 2 white women, and the black female in the department that I work in, the other so-called assistant supervisor, She is standing in a corner, and the two other white women are seated talking. They're all supposed to be, I guess, having some kind of meeting. Just that visual, I say, okay, let me check that one off. Let me write that one down. So that is racist. My next one is, I've been noticing myself being isolated. I call it particular isolation because the reason I'm using that is because we don't have most of the staff here at the courthouse. But in the area that I'm in, I'm the only one over there because as far as the other three ladies that work in the department, one of them has been pulled over to the other more important side. The second female coworker has been working from home, and she has offspring. And the third one conducts the marriage license sessions. So she's been extracted from the area as well. So the reason I say that is because I'm noticing they are coming over there saying, oh, you know, I just thought I'd come over here and check on you. Or, you know, one of them was, it's just so quiet. The same one, right? It's just so quiet over here. And I say, I'm just waiting for the next call. And she said, well, it's just not over here. It's just the phones in general, they aren't ringing. So I took that to conclude that they know I'm being isolated like that. You know, not that I don't have any contact with people and becoming more susceptible to catching the virus or whatever, but just in terms of how they already have it, they already had it like that. You know what I mean? They already had the black people on one side. I call it the reject side, and they have a more important side, official records. That's for all of the pale-skinned people, all right, and the white people. And they have that side more significantly staffed, okay? And then what I noticed working this week, I only went in for 2 days off the rest of the week. They had the lab area. So where if people are taking a call to the operator or doing the indexing or doing the scanning and redaction, they're all huddled in that area talking. You know, even the black female supervisor. So she comes back, and I'm in with these last two. This one is where she comes in and says, oh, are you doing okay? I said, codified response, getting the work done, getting it done. And then I switched it up, and she asked me like four times in like 45 minutes to an hour, are you okay or whatever? And I said, one word, isolation. So she says, she giggles, and she says, oh, you know, sometimes it's good to be isolated, sometimes it's not. And I didn't respond. Okay. And my last one is, I was walking through the area on the other side, and this was just about when it started happening, because I was up there talking to the chief judge, you know, trying to get constructive information. And the non-white female overheard my conversation with the black female. And I'm like, man, I don't know what's going to happen with the scheduling. Everybody seemed like they're going home or whatever. And I guess we're still here. So, a statement was made. No, she asked me a question. She's like, oh, you know why that is? You know why they get to go home and, you know, we get to stay? And I say, why is that? Because she said, because clerks' lives don't matter. All right? So my response was, if I understand what you're saying, I'm used to that. That was my exact response. But yeah, like a lot of the watching and I placed the email policy on my desk, on the desk that I've been assigned, so they can see that as they traverse through the area, because they know I sent that email. But this is somewhat interrupted thing, so definitely on the watch. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Well, I guess real quick now, wait a minute now, if I was going to be the non-white adversary and say, now, hold on a second now, with the pen, you pull the slick one, because, you know, we got the Rona, and nobody wants to touch anybody right now, and if I go to give you the pen, I don't know if you wash your hands, you don't know if I washed my hands, and, you know, we could rub our sweaty hands together, and oh, then both we got, you know, see, we got the Rona, so we avoid all that, I just put the pen down, bam, then you can go fill out the wedding license certificate, and no Rona. That this has nothing to do with racism. I just don't want germs. How about that?
No, you mean to say if that happened during the time, or like during while this was going on? Because this happened before this came out. But if I were to respond, if it was happening now, I don't know. I kind of be a tough one, because I have seen, like, I've taken pictures of like a black couple, and she was in there, and I did see her hand the pen to somebody, you know, after she signed it. But see, now I'm thinking they aren't really doing ceremonies; they're just doing like the sessions. So I don't know how I would be able to examine that one. That is a good observation. But I try to look for how they behave in regards to other people. But I think she's very observant as to how she engages with me as a black person.
Hmm. All right. Well, you said this happened before the whole Rona thing broke out. So, yeah. Oh, well, probably was not a hand washing thing then. That has been my experience. What he just said, given the answer, much obliged, was many white people are very deliberate, methodical about how they move, certain things that they do, especially as it relates to other people in work environments. Not saying everything, but frequently, and especially you work there, you see these people on a regular basis, you kind of get to know when some of these folks, like, yeah, I think she didn't want to hand me the pen. Yeah. Like, you know, you know when you've seen a lot of these folks daily. That isolating the Negro, he termed it particular isolation, where they already have you in the Negro section, and now I would just move you further to the outskirts of the Negro section and move everybody else away so you can be all out here. And then we'll wander back here from time to time. You still alive? You doing all right? Oh, we just came checking. Just making sure everything is, you know, good. It's all right. Say, what in the way? This one is common all over the world. In fact, we had Olivia Ebanks. She's a black female in the UK. She wrote her book, Almost British, the whole book. It's almost 500 pages from page one to the end. It's all about workplace racism. She was on the program in 2011. She said they had floors where she worked. So they put her on the first floor. All the important white people, like you said, they were on like the third floor. And they would do the same. Oh, we just came down in the cellar. Just, you know, see how you're doing. Everything. Everything all right? You good? Oh, okay. Well, we're going to go on back up yonder to heaven. I mean, the floor, third floor, yes. And then go on back. About a very, very common. It is no accident. And then why are you coming back here four times? You don't have work to do to come back here and ask me the same thing over and over and over. I'm still in the Negro section. I didn't go anywhere. Like, what is going on? Is this surveillance? Are you all making sure I didn't leave, try to escape? Like, what is going on? Like, if you are feeling like you are the one that's being isolated, because I think we've had some other people who said that, where they felt like they were kind of being socially distanced from everybody else and kind of scooted to the outskirts of the office or what have you. And for some folks, that can be really upsetting. We're not looking at these as social environments anyway, even if we weren't under the pandemic and everything. It's not social time. We're just there to get work done. But all of that, I think, at minimum, making sure that we correctly recognize that is white supremacy racism. This isn't that I have a hygiene problem. This isn't they're concerned about social distancing. This isn't they want to have make sure that I have a whole desk. This is get that Negro. Oh, yeah, make sure he's not around. Might even be make sure he doesn't infect other Negroes. Like he's asking questions and all the rest of them. Yeah, have him in the back. Put him out there. We put him down. He said they got the cellar that they opened up so they can do driving. Like, we'll put him down there. In fact, once we get all this, make that his permanent office. We'll put him down there, put his water down there, too, and we don't have to deal with him at all. That is very common in a number of workplaces where they will do that in a very varying degree. Sometimes it's in a more metaphorical sense. You'll just be left out of everything. They'll do a lot of activity. Sometimes it's work-related. It's not even social, and you'll still be left out. It takes a lot of different forms. Call it what it is. White supremacy, racism, every time. Much obliged, caller in Florida. Let's see. Folks in Canada, global pandemic. Excuse me, where's my water? Global pandemic. We'll nab our folks in Canada. Let's see, we'll start with B in Toronto. You should be with us, ma'am.
Hi, greetings, guests, and greetings, callers and listeners. Yes, I was listening to the email that you had read earlier regarding the disgusting way that the boss or the second person in command had spoken to the writer of the email. In that circumstance, I would recommend documenting the incident, which they've done through the email, but have a separate documentation. And also, if possible, bringing in a secretive recording device so that any time that the boss or second-in-command that does this ridiculous behavior, they do that again, that it can be caught on tape or on the recording device, which can easily be downloaded off of Google Play or other mediums, and they could even do that from their phone with pressing record and having that done so that they have more proof regarding workplace harassment and build a case that way. So that's what I would recommend. In terms of what's happening here in Ontario, in particular, at the plantation that I'm on, they've provided all the workers, including myself, a card so that if stopped by the police, then I would need to show the card advising that I'm an essential worker and that I work with a vulnerable population. So that's what the card actually says on there, along with the company name and who to contact if there's any further questions. So it's just a very strange feeling of having to be carrying this around with me. But if that's going to help keep the police off my back while I'm trying to get to the plantation, and then get back home, then so be it. However, despite all the stuff that has been going through the plantation, where they are trying to undermine my position and subvert me in a variety of ways, I still kept to the plan of the exit strategy. And it looks like I'm in the running, actually being able to realize that exit plan. I just submitted some references for another plantation to consider, and I feel a little more optimistic of the other plantation, because there's better representation, and I've heard much better things about that company from other non-whites as well. So looking forward to that, just seeing how the process goes, and if I get through on the position after the references and all the documentation's been sent through, then I'll be leaving the current plantation, which I can't wait. I've noticed that sometimes at the current plantation, they're not always appearing antagonistic. Sometimes they will show that they are trying to be cooperative. And I recognize that sometimes that's a way for them, you know, much like an abusive relationship, sometimes that's a way to lull the victims into staying longer in hopes that it might actually be a better place. And then they'll go back to, of course, their racist ways. And I'm really proud of myself of sticking to the exit strategy regardless of the situation. Let's see. Also, the other day I was doused with cooking oil by one of the clients there. Thank goodness it wasn't hot. It was cold. I can't wait until I get out of this place. And thank you. I leave the line.
Much obliged, be in Toronto. I talked about seasoning my pots yesterday, my cast iron, new cast iron cookware that I got. Haven't even been able to use, so excited. And the whole oiling process and everything. How did you get cooking oil thrown on you in the workplace, like accidentally? Like, I don't remember you telling us you work at like McDonald's or Jack and Jill. Like, what? Yeah, break that one down for us if you can.
Sure. So the plantation that I work at is a group home, and it's to, even though it's a part of a treatment program, it's there to simulate somewhat of a home environment for the clients who live there. So there is a kitchen, and the client decided to take the oil out of the cupboard, uncap it, I happened to be in the kitchen at the time, and started to throw the oil at me. He also threw oil on another person as well. Majority of it went on to myself. So that's how the cooking oil went on to me. Unfortunately, at that time, could not do the behavior strategies, which would be a team approach, because it would have been restrained. Because the oil's on the floor, and it would have caused more injury. And as soon as the other person, their favorite worker, came out, the person immediately sat on the floor. This is the stuff that happens in some of these essential services, especially if you're dealing with group homes, where you're dealing with highly challenging behaviors.
Wow. We got that again. Another essential. See, we have a high volume of essential workers, it seems. And B is not even in the States. So that's essential worker right there. Non-Clemson grad essential worker. The fellow that got the fellow with the donuts and the pizza party, essential worker. It seems like we got a lot of essential workers here. They were talking about that LA Times, that was a report I started with. They were saying that they thought that was one component of racism, that, yeah, you don't get that opportunity to just go sit at home and chill. Like, get that mask, get your gloves, whatever else you got to get out here and battle the Rona and battle the racists who are throwing cooking oil on you and everything else. Or I might be presumptuous. This could have been a non-white person, but yeah, like I would not want to be, this just sounds like a work environment that I would be ecstatic about fleeing. You've got racist coworkers who are sabotaging your efforts on the job, and then clients that are hostile and all, like, yeah, better things. Work your exit strategy. We will be right there with you, hoping for the best. And I'm proud also, under extremely difficult circumstances, to kind of have that focus, stick to it. It's not going to be easy, as the white woman who was mentioned, who's pregnant and can just switch jobs willy-nilly, no big deal. She was working from home. Not going to be as easy for victims of racism, but sticking to it. I love it. Give us the update, be in Toronto. Watch out for the flying cooking oil. Nab some of our other listener in Canada. Other caller in Canada. Commentary, observations, questions, sir?
Oh, I just wanted to add about there was a gentleman who decided to remain silent when he was in the room talking to the white female. Like, sometimes being silent is a good codified response to someone who's practicing racism, or a non-white person who's being used, to shield the actions of a white supremacist, which is basically racial shadowboxing. So when I was working here in Canada, I didn't get a lot direct white terrorism done by white people. It was usually done through non-white people. So a lot of my terroristic experiences at work were done by non-white people, because a lot of the times when white people are practicing racism, sometimes it's a supervisor, and then they would speak to a bunch of non-white people, and then they would sick a bunch of non-white people on to another non-white person, and then they would victimize that person. And then the white person can say, oh, that's not racism. That's just two non-white people mistreating each other. And that's what Mr. Fuller called racial shadow boxing. So that's usually the kinds of things that I was experiencing at work. And my work situation was really tough. Because I had to be very extremely codified, because I was also working with race soldiers. So I had a situation where when I was at work, I was working with people who were undercover cops. And as they do their work, they don't think what they're doing is practicing racism, but that's exactly it is, because as a non-white person, I'm in a weak position, and so they would just be terrorizing me on the shift. I was working in a kind of like a warehouse kind of a situation, and that's the kind of thing that I would be dealing with. And when I was in the change room, I would just be reading Mr. Fuller's book, the code book. And the people activity area of labor was the area the part that I read the most. And then when I wasn't reading the code book, the people activity of labor, I would go to politics, because a lot of the kinds of terroristic things that white people get other non-white people to do against each other is within the area of politics. And so I think you guys said something about a boss who comes out cursing at you, and what would you do? Sometimes I would just remain silent, because a lot of non-white people have this idea that they're there to have fun, or they're there to be, you know, to be the entertainment for the white people. And that kind of thing can get them into trouble. And then I'd have situations where someone would be cursing at me and yelling at me. Again, keep in mind, these are race soldiers. These are not just regular terrorist white people. They're actually undercover cops. So, you know, I was really using Mr. Phillips' book. So typically the kinds of things that I would do, I would use conversation control, and always try to see if, to always ask questions. So that's particularly how I would try to control the conversation. And if they would do something to try to get me angry, I would try to switch my emotions to logic. So I would use active listening and, you know, and just try to concentrate on what I'm there to do. And that was to do my work. And I didn't expect people to respect me, because a lot of black people think that people can disrespect them or diss them. Mr. Ferraris talks about self-respect is telling yourself the truth even when it hurts. So a lot of people who, a lot of black people think when someone's disrespecting you, no one can disrespect you. Only you can disrespect yourself. So, for example, with that example that the caller had, where, or there's a boss that said something rude, you know, I don't have to even answer him. Or I can choose not to engage, or, and I could just stay silent. So those are the kinds of things that I've done, and I will mute my line.
Much obliged. Other caller in Canada. Definitely don't feel compelled to respond to everything in the workplace. Silence will often work very well in situations, and again, in those situations, you can't even take that time to think about the best possible thing to say, to do, to respond. Let's see. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. People we missed totally. Caller in New Jersey.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Gus, good evening. last time I called with a report, and it's kind of funny. I call, I just hope this ain't like, you know, this don't appear to be like a diary when I call in. It's just chronic a lot of in my life, but on a workplace. Last time I called, I was laid off. Sunday, I was called by my former employer, who laid us off because of the shutdown in New York City. Most of the business is in New York City. I'm a truck driver. So he called me and he said, hey, listen, can you work? So I said, okay, yeah, I can work, no problem. I received two checks already from unemployment. I was successful in filing my unemployment claim online with the wonderful assistance from a black female. Again, I champion black females. So I went back to work, and they said, okay, well, you're going to do home deliveries in New Jersey. So, Gus, I went back to work. So I've been working, and my reports of these home deliveries, white people are doing very well in this pandemic. All right, I don't know about the lower class white people, but the home that I'm delivering to in New Jersey, the Bergen County area, very affluent, $1 million and up homes. The company has told us not to take tips. I'm taking any tip that they give me. All right. So they give me $10, delivered to one house. The lady gave me $20. She ran, she chased me down and told me to take more money. Thus, she gave me an extra $10. I took it. All right. So, honestly, being though I'm from an urban area in New Jersey, I'm from Newark, New Jersey, and a friend of mine who I reported last week who was battling the coronavirus, he passed at the age of 39. And when I went to that urban area, the Essex County area in New Jersey, people who are familiar with New Jersey know what I'm talking about, North Irvington, East Orange. It was very depressing. So for me to just get off of work and deliver in affluent areas and to come to the black area that was very deprived, very depressed, very dim, very dark, if you want to call it a metaphor, it really disturbed me, you know, knowing that the group of people who built this country during the time of this pandemic is living in those conditions, and I got to see how fabulous white people are living. I seen white people, not that many because it's a suburban area, they were not practicing social distancing. Their children was riding bikes, they were jogging, they were getting work done to their homes. They're just basically sitting it out until the pandemic passed and they'll go back to business as usual. So I went back to work. Now, this is only a week on the job. A woman in the office has just died. We get a mass email and says that a woman died. Nice woman. Non-white, non-black woman passed away. She battled cancer. She won. But I'm assuming she died from the coronavirus. The only the reason why I'm assuming she died from the coronavirus is because we got an email and they informed us that the woman passed away. When I get to the warehouse and I go to the office to punch in, all the lights are off. All the office staff is not there. So I'm assuming because the woman passed away, they decided to quarantine themselves, but not the grunt workers, the warehouse, the truck drivers. We're the only ones in the building. As I'm talking to another coworker, I hear my supervisor over the intercom. You guys are too close to each other. Separate, because they want us to practice social distancing. He basically sent that message on the intercom through his phone at home. They have access to the cameras. All right. So not one time in the email did they explain to us what this particular lady in the office died from. But now one can make the assumption that she died from the coronavirus because nobody's in the office. We are a union job. We are union, all right? So the shop steward, you know, he came to us, talked to us, you know, what do you guys want to do? I said, look, I'll continue to work, but what I'll do is I'll email the supervisor I can email the supervisor. I didn't tell them this, but this is some things I can do. I can email the supervisor my time so I don't have to go in close to proximity of the office to punch in. Those are options. But he asked what we would do. I said, listen, let me tell you. Anything that y'all are ready to do, whether you want to work or don't want to work, I'm behind you. Just let me know. So I gloved up. I had my mask on, took my ride out. So I get an email from my supervisor. He says, there's only one route in New York City. We're doing home deliveries. Usually we don't do home deliveries. So I'm driving a big truck through suburban New Jersey. So he says, hey, one of your coworkers, he's kind of, he doesn't want to work in New York City. He's kind of tired. He just needs a break. To note, this may mean nothing. He's an Italian white male that's handling in New York now. There's only one truck in New York City. It's a fleet of 13 trucks. All right. So he's in New York. One commercial truck in New Jersey and four other trucks, including myself, who got called back. We're doing all home routes. He says, do you mind just giving him a break and going to New York City? Now, New York City, last time it was reported, is the epicenter of the coronavirus. So he asked me if I wanted to do it. Now, to give you further detail, within that truck, there's a helper. So we have a helper. I don't know where that helper is going or coming when he enters my truck. So I told him, no. When you called me, you said that I was going to do home deliveries. I don't have anybody in the truck, and I don't have to come in contact with anybody. I just drop groceries. I just drop whatever they order at the front of their house, and I leave. The tips that they give us, a lot of times they might meet me at the door, and they just place it on the step and close their door. And I just drop the material and go. So I'm not in any contact with anybody. So I told him, no, I don't want to do it. When you called me, you said I'm going to do New Jersey home deliveries. So he said, okay, I understand, but why? I thought that was very disrespectful. So I emailed him back. I said, for one, there's another person in the truck with me. At this time, I do not feel comfortable with anybody in the truck. We are in the middle of a global pandemic. If you wasn't going to be real specific on what you was calling me back to work after you laid me off, you told me I was going to do home delivery, I could have just stayed home and collect unemployment. I didn't receive any emails from him back. But he said from the email, he said, okay, but he wanted an explanation. I gave him an explanation, and I'm to the point where my life is more important. You can just let me go, and I'll just sit home and collect unemployment. So, I mean, it's and I'm talking to people on the internet, and people are blaming black people for the disproportionate numbers of black death and black infection, not taken into consideration. See, they think it's just Negroes just going outside, not paying attention to government orders. No, it's Negroes that's going to work in contracting this virus. I'll close with that.
Much obliged, caller in New Jersey. Black self-respect, black self-respect. They, in fact, I think they have, like, just to mark how grave the situation is in New York, I woke up this morning, man, I'm having to change. That's one thing I'm having to change. I can't look at the news or email when I first wake up. I have to do other things, and then I can, like, gradually get to my email. I rolled over. I looked at It was in the New York Times. I looked in the New York Times, and they said that they were looking at doing temporary graves in the park. And I said, to what? Like, what are you talking about? Pause for the black people that were buried out in Wall Street, I believe it was, up there where they found, well, that was a slave burial spot. Anyway, they said, yeah, we got temporary freezers and all of this. And they said New York, they had more deaths in one day this week than anywhere in the world, like in New York. Like, oh my gosh, it's horrible. People dying over the world. So, I mean, just for scale, for people, because we got people in Canada and different parts of the world, like New York City, supposed to be one of the worst spots in the world for this virus right now. Like Italy, Spain, New York City, worst spot in the world to be. So you got, and this, he said in Italian, because Italy, super, like it was really bad there, like last month, like thousands of people died from thousands, it's probably tens of thousands, like lots and lots of people. And they don't have a huge population in Italy anyway. So really, really bad. They've been on like super lockdown in Italy for I think like a month now. So to have this Italian white man, suspected race soldier, that'd be curious too to know, did he have to give an explanation as to why he didn't want to do this, or could he just say, oh, I'm tired, boss, I'm, you know, ciao. He goes to you, Victor Minister, what? You don't want to do it? What? Well how come? Well, yeah, maybe I can. Yeah, we can work through it. Yeah, just explain it, and then, you know, I can help you process it, because you might have some fears that are unfounded. No, I have black self-respect, and I do not need to go into New York City so I can die with everybody. Mass graves. You can look at the New York Times. That's what they were talking about. Like, man, we might not have space, and the mayor had to come back, and no, we're not burying people in Central Park, and they'll be out here. But they did have a big picture of mass graves on the front page for New York City. That was New York City exclusively. That's not everywhere. That's just, you know, supposed to be really bad there. But black self-respect. No thanks. I'm going to put that in context, too. Like, we were just fired. Like, we were trying to struggle and strive to get unemployment. And now, oh, yeah, come back and work. And we're going to send you into the worst place and probably without hazard pay. Be lucky if you get some goggles and a mask. And then, make sure it's not lost, the tacky, that's not even tacky. In my view, that is so dangerous. He says that this female dies. Pause for your friend who passed away as well. So at 39, like, geez. But he says that one of his co-workers, non-white female, she passes away. Don't know if it was from the virus or whatever else. They come in, and it's a ghost town. Tumbleweed is going across the office floor and everything. As what's going on? What? And he's talking to somebody, and then the voice of God booms in on, oh, you're too close. Back up. Got too close. Are you serious? You have vacated and didn't even tell us in advance. Like, oh my God, do you think she had the cooties? Oh, we got it. Yeah, it's the Chinese virus. And she had, oh yeah, we got to get out of here. Yeah, shut it down. I'm going to be at home. We'll watch these coons from the sofa at home and tell them, oh, yep, too close. Got it back over there. Yeah, back over there. Ooh, give me another daiquiri. Matter of fact, I'm going to put an order in myself. Home delivery, that sounds great. Well, he's an essential employee too, right? We're all essential employees, but I'm an essential employee from home with my Alexa and feet propped up, and I can watch and direct you all on the stream, and you all can go to New York City and die. Hopefully, if you get in the mass grave, we'll come and put some flowers down on the spot where we think you and your friends are. Context of white supremacy. Let's see. Other folks dialed in that we missed totally, if you have a hand up. Let's see. Bay Area Mom, did you have comments here? You should be with us.
Hi, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Let me take you off speaker. Put you on normal. Okay. So I went to work this week. I went all week. I don't know if it's something in the air, because you can feel it. Whatever it is, you can feel it. So I have to cover to get out. If I don't go to work, I don't receive any money. So I applied for unemployment, me and the 6 million other people. I haven't heard anything from them, so I have to work. I try to take care of myself to the best of my ability so I don't catch whatever it is, catch anything, scratchy throat or the sniffles or the headache. Sometimes my head will hurt. I don't know why, but I can tell that it's something in the air. The child that I only have one child. They say two. I think what it seems like is we get two different cases a week. So perhaps you can monitor wherever you catch the bubonic plague or however you're transferring it. And I just have one. I don't think I can deal with two, especially without a change of clothes, I believe. I'm going to see how unemployment comes and flows. And with the parent that I have, she just said, if it's not worth it, let her know and she'll do whatever it is on her side to make sure that I don't have to come. So I'll see if it's economically worth it. For the moment, it is, because I have, the rent is paused, but it doesn't mean it's not due. It's just on pause. So I still have to, you know, I still have to do what I have to do to survive. And it's strange. The streets are kind of filling up a little bit more, as far as the freeway, I mean. It's not as dim as it was the first few weeks of quarantine or staying home. You have a shelter in place. What I'm noticing is the police are more visible, so it's a little more scary. And with the different words, it seems like the police will start coming in. My daughter told me that one of her coworkers were pulled over and in Oakland and was wondering why her license plate said one city and she's in Oakland. What are you doing out here? And they detained her for 20 minutes because they didn't believe her story. So I'm a little more nervous because I'm not as police friendly. And, you know, I try to follow the don't fuss, don't fight, don't flee. I try to, you know, compose myself because I know I'm under siege, but I still don't want to have any contact with the people. So I have my papers with me. If I have to go out on the weekend, I have a DoorDash sign that I bought that hangs from your window because I'm so strange. And when I would do delivery, I wanted all the accessories. So that works for me as far as a visual. If I'm out, you'll think delivery before you'll think whatever else you may think about me being outside. So that's about all. And as far as how you're talked to, yeah, I'm very stickler about how you communicate with me. I don't care if it's a coworker, an employer, whoever, associate, anybody on the street. Yeah, you cannot talk to me discourteous. You can't be discourteous. You can't talk under my clothes, nothing. So I could relate to that completely, and I don't care who it is. So with that, I'll mute my line, and thank you for taking my call.
Much obliged, Bay Area Mom. I know here in Seattle, Washington State, we are under a stay-at-home shelter-in-place as well. Have been for 2.5 weeks, almost 3 weeks. However, they said, it was in the newspaper yesterday, because it was really nice yesterday. It was almost 70 degrees. It was probably the warmest day we've had this year. And they said this weekend is supposed to be even better. Like, it might actually hit 70. It was pretty nice today. The sun came and went, but they said tomorrow and Sunday is supposed to be really nice. And they were concerned. I said, oh man, it might be hard to get people to stay inside as the weather becomes a little more summerish and people have been cramped in for these weeks and everything. And then they reported that it's not, the outbreak isn't quite as bad as they thought it was going to be in Washington State so far. So I said, oh man, They were already, man, we got to go out and close the beaches and have more police out. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to, you know, particularly if this drags on and it gets warmer, it will be increasingly difficult. Like, if people are already balking about this now, like, it'll be increasingly challenging to make people stay inside. But, yeah, a lot of folks in that position, you know, am I working? Are you doing unemployment? Is it going to take a billion years? It's not like, you know, I don't have expenses in a system of racism, white supremacy. Like, lots of folks just being stuck in that position, talking about being stressed and just trying to figure out as best you can to manage to get through all of this. You can just contrast that with our caller in New Jersey, what he just said. The folks that are, you know, run outside and leave, you know, $40 tip, you know, for the Negro. Thank you so much for bringing our $500 worth of, you know, wares to the. That's what I said. Bring, you know, 500 rolls of toilet paper. We already had 100. Now we have 600 rolls of toilet paper just in case. You can do the comparison contrast. Substantially different position that we are operating in on the plantation. Let's see. Irie in Louisiana. Do you have commentary? You should be with us as well.
Yes, I'm here. I just thought of something. While people are out working or whatever, be careful. I'm not working like I normally do right now, but I was out just trying to run on a trail, and I was quite far. I'd say more than 10 feet away from two white people, a white couple, and their dog. One was a Rottweiler, and as soon as he saw me, he lunged for me, and the man had to, you know, forcefully pull his leash. It reminded me how my family would let me know that there are people that train their dogs not to like black people. So please be careful out in the community while you're doing your jobs, or I shouldn't say community, out in the world. Because what the other caller was saying is quite true. White people are very comfortable. They're still doing what they do normally. Anyhow, so I just wanted to express some frustration about workplace racism. And maybe somebody said it before, but it starts in school. It starts with the miseducation that we receive as non-white. And how information is left out, very valuable information that I find myself having to still learn over the years. I've been teaching myself law, and I've also been teaching myself finance and commerce. You know, I do freelance graphic design. I didn't do it as much before this happened because I was substitute teaching. But I find myself having to do that since I can't teach anymore and I don't have any other way of supplementing my income except to go back and do that. So I'm trying to set up some e-commerce things, and I'm getting frustrated because I don't have the, you know, the knowledge that I need fully to just jump right into it. I also have a learning curve when it comes to social media because, you know, maybe 2-3 years ago, all you needed was Facebook, but now it's Facebook, Instagram. My child is telling me get on TikTok. I'm not seeing the feasibility of it, but he's saying do it, and, you know, there's indications that he's correct, but then it's also like I have to spread myself out with a little bit of reserve that I have financially to put these ads up. And I don't know if they'll be effective, for real, for real. And, you know, also in the aspect of just learning business, I had a hard time when I went to try to open a business account about what I was doing and was basically told no in so many ways and had to leave out of there disappointed and wondering where I could open an account. You know, without having to justify my life every time I go in there. And, you know, I just find myself right now playing catch up on this re-education that I'm experiencing. And that's a part of the ploy of racism because that's the race. You know, you stay behind while we stay ahead. And the plan is never to allow us to catch up. Another thing I looked into as far as workplace racism, I also was thinking about getting into algorithm trading, which I want to speak on more tomorrow for Thomas, because I'm not sure if he listens tonight, but this algorithm training or program is priced so high, and they're so codified about how they talk about it. Like, of course, this program is for people with a significant amount of money that they can risk. You know, only do this if you have this amount of money. And, you know, I was like, fine, you know, group economics. Maybe I can get other non-white people that I know. Let's throw some money together and get this program going. Maybe we can, you know, invest together and then go along together as profits come in. And so I called the 800 number, and I suspect it was a white female that answered. She sounded like she was somewhere below the Mason-Dixon line. And, you know, I gave her my name, politely told her I was interested in getting information about how to acquire the program and also what's required to run the program on the computer. So she says, okay, that's great. Well, just hold a second. I'm going to get someone to come to the line and answer all your questions. So I'd say about 15 seconds went by, and she came back, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, well, it's kind of busy today, and there's no one that can help you, but I'm definitely going to put your name in our system for interest so someone can call you back soon, hopefully. And honestly, immediately I thought, okay, you heard that I was a non-white person, and nobody wants to talk to me because you figure I don't have money for it. And I honestly don't, but I wonder why, you know. Why don't I have all the money on my own to get this program? You know, but again, it's just they're making a point of making sure that we don't have what we need to live full and viable lives. And, just one other tidbit. It's funny now that I'm out of the situation. When I was a mental health tech employee, which would be considered essential now, I was with older white lady who has mental illness. She repeats a lot of things, and, you know, she also accuses people, like she'll say, you hit me, and it won't be true. So I was getting ready to get her ready to be transported back to the facility, and I was like, hey, can you sit up for me? I need to, you know, change your clothes or whatever. And while I was saying that, a black nurse walked in that I was familiar with. And this so-called mentally ill white lady observed this despite her disabilities. So when I went to assist her with taking her clothes off and the other lady came over to assist too, she yells out, I'm not black, so I don't know what you're bothering me for. And I was like, oh, okay, you're not that crazy, you know. So whenever they can, they will practice racism to the hilt, to the end. And I'll mute my line. Thank you for letting me share.
Not that confused. Not that confused. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Timothy Wise, that's one of his popular little tidbits where he'll tell a story about a white woman, and she's supposed to be suffering from, like, dementia, Alzheimer's, mad cow, from eating too much nonsense, whatever it is, where she's not supposed to have her mental faculties all together. And they somehow, even without all of her mental faculties together, she can still figure out how to practice white supremacy racism. That was, Timothy tells that one on a pretty regular basis. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in that we missed totally, if you have a hand up, caller, last four digits, 3101. Did you have commentary? 3101.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to all the listeners and the other callers. This is in Yamane, Nebraska. This is my first time calling in for workplace racism, but I've been meaning to for quite some time. I've been taking notes of different incidents, but at the moment, I'm going to try to make my reports as concise as possible. I guess I'm a twofold essential worker at the time. I have a part-time job as well as a full-time job. My part-time job is loading trucks for UPS, and they consider us essential workers at the moment. But in Nebraska, it's one of the few states that has yet to initiate a stay-at-home policy. Even though there's been pressure on the government to initiate one, he has not yet done so. But we are prepared in case that eventuality comes into fruition. And while working at UPS, we load several types of packages, heavy boxes containing couches and small packages containing letters. I've been considering making my exit from that position for several reasons, including one having to do with safety. There's been a safety issue. I'm working in an area where I'm pulling boxes off the conveyor belt and loading them into the truck. So there's an additional conveyor belt above the one in which I'm located, sending packages down further to the another area at the end of the same belt that we're working on. And there's been several times where the packages have been falling down onto the workers in my area. I'm a worker on one side of my area. There's another non-white black male opposite of me in the same area, and that is the only area in the entire facility where packages are able to fall down on people. And about a week ago, I'd actually made a report to one of the overseers. All of the overseers are white males, by the way. When I first started working, there were two non-white males, but they've since left, and they've been replaced with white males. But I made a report to one of the overseers at the plantation. I'm not sure if he made a note of it, but the lead overseer came in today when it was reported that something very heavy had fallen, and he came specifically to my area and asked if something had fallen on me. I told him no, but I told him there has been a safety issue, and I've been meaning to report it to him directly. He seemed that concerned. And part of the reason why packages are falling is because he encourages people pulling packages off of one belt from the trucks that are delivering to the belts where we load them. He's been encouraging them to get as many packages off as quickly as they can, so they pile up on each other on the belt, and there's an overflow. And part of that overflow happens to flow down onto us. He stopped the belt at the top, climbed up there, and he went to sorting the packages, and he actually knocked on down, and it came in the close proximity of making contact with me. And when I looked up at him, he saw the expression on my face, and he's like, "Oh, I hope that didn't hit you. I'm not trying to hit you or anything, but I'm like, all you have to do is slow down the belt. To slow down the progress of the packages, but they're trying to save their profit margin because we're being overloaded with packages, and he keeps having us come in, so I have to load about 1,300 to 1,400 packages on three different trucks within about a five-hour time frame. And usually, a usual load would be about 900 packages total, and that would be considered a heavy load. And right now we're doing as much as we did around Christmas shopping season, but we were coming in about 12:30 in the morning. And now I come in about 4 o'clock in the morning, and we don't get off until about 9 in the morning. Another reason I'm making my exit strategy is because I'm a single father raising three children, small children. And it's been a load on my babysitter because her children are not in school. I homeschool my children, and she's been needing to spend more time at home with her children throughout this entire thing. So it's been an issue all around, especially with this job. And my second job is
making deliveries for DoorDash. So I'm actually concerned because I come into contact with a lot of white people, and many of them don't seem to be taking this very seriously. There is social distancing practices encouraged, and there has been a lot of traffic that's died down around the city in general, but I don't trust white people when it comes to their self hygiene practices. From what I've witnessed personally, I just don't trust them. But that's pretty much all I wanted to report at this time. Hope I didn't jump all over the place. But yeah, I'll try to make more calls into workplace racism in the future. I just don't want to continue to be a spectator. Thank you for allowing me to share, and I'll meet my wife.
Much obliged, in Yame, in Nebraska. Good to hear from you. Lots of attempted parents navigating through this. I said, you know, I don't have children, but man, wow, it's a lot to navigate. Be a lot to navigate without having offspring, and then add that into it. Like, wow. I say pretty frequently for workplace racism, your safety, you have to make that a top priority under any circumstances. That sort of thing is routine. They were talking about Amazon workers were striking this week, and Instacart, I think, in New York and some of the other warehouse type facilities and beyond were same type of thing. No regard for our safety. Like, what, you know, what is going on here? All this recklessness, we already heard white people sitting at home. Hey, we got $500 Amazon orders. Like, let's get it rolling. We got all kinds of things to drop off. And so we're being overloaded in the warehouse. Now we compromise safety. Get as many on the pallet as you can. You know, get 50 boxes on the pallet. And then, whoa, my Lord, Jesus, did I hit you? I didn't mean, we just got so much. Like, what type of environment is that? Like, forget if it was glass in the package or whatever, but I mean, what type of work environment is that? How we're going to work? Like, just because it's a virus or whatever, almost killed somebody, box almost dropped. Imagine that you're in a work environment. Oh, did that box fall on you this morning? What? Insurance company doesn't have anything to say about that. You all don't have workplace safety policies. Like, they have, I know they have, that's an excuse for donut day on some jobs that I've been on. Like, oh man, we didn't have any accidents, no workplace injuries this month. It is Pizza Friday. Like, yes. That is appalling. Exit strategy. I am with you 5,000%. Exit strategy. And anybody, you're in a work situation where there's that type of reckless disregard for your life and safety, get out. No reference to Jordan Peele. Just get out. Context of white supremacy, much obliged. And that's something too, for, he was talking about the young lady who was watching, looking after his children while he's out working and everything, and you know, her children aren't in school and she's trying to spend time with them. Like, strain on lots of people. Lots. I mean, it's just amazing, absolutely amazing. Other folks, we have little less than 20 minutes left in the broadcast. If you have other observations, questions, if you have any suggestions for what has been shared, your own situation, feel free. Just make sure you don't wait till the last minute, especially if we've not heard from you at all and you think you might want to participate. Go ahead and get your hand up. 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Draptomania, did you have commentary? You should be with us.
Hi, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, hi, hi, guests and callers. I just wanted to report on my workplace situation. I've been out of work because of the coronavirus, but I am fortunate enough to still be getting paid for, you know, being out of work. And I just actually spoke to my director, and she was asking, because I catch public transportation, and they wanted to know if, you know, which employees took public transportation. And, you know, I told her that I took public transportation. And she told me that I didn't have to report that to work until further notice. So the reason that they told me that I can still put in my time, you know, as usual, and still get paid for it. So, you know, I did ask the question because I was like, he didn't tell us why, you know, we didn't have to come back to work. So I did ask the question. I said, well, you know, did you have to get tested or something like that? So, you know, she said, well, why would you ask me that? And I thought, well, you know, maybe because, you know, we have to take the public transportation. So maybe they thought that, you know, we were more susceptible to, you know, catching the COVID virus. And she said, no, the reason that they told us that is because, they were more concerned about us as workers because the bus schedule has changed tremendously since, you know, this epidemic has gone on. And now they're running on a Sunday schedule. It's like every hour that they run, and they stop running like at earlier times now. So you can't get around like you would normally get around. So she said the reason that they're doing that is because they're concerned about other employees and they wanted to make sure that they're okay. So I feel grateful that I'm still going to be compensated for my time, even though I'm not going to be at work. So I was scheduled to go to work next week, but I don't have to go in now because I take public transportation. So like I said, I'm truly grateful that, you know, that I am working somewhere that I'm still, you know, able to be compensated for not going to work. I'm still receiving my benefits and everything like that and don't have to deal with the unemployment system. I'm very familiar with unemployment, so I know how that whole, you know, game is. You have to put back and wait and, you know, try and get in contact with, you know, the unemployment office and things like that. That can be a real headache. So I'm just really grateful about that. So I just wanted to share that. And that's basically all I have.
Much obliged, Draptomania. That I know many folks, or I know some people have been in that position where they don't necessarily have to work right now and they can still be compensated. So you can be thankful, take advantage, enjoy the time away from having to be in your work environment, do something constructive, do some, you know, cooking, whatever, reading. But yeah, that's, you know, just being thankful to be able to be in that position. They can say that they're concerned for the workers. Great. But absolutely, lots of non-white people around the world absolutely are not in that space at all. We've heard from quite a few of them on the program today, not in that space at all. Even just the number of essential workers, I was kind of it stood out just listening to folks this evening, the amount of folks who are in essential worker classified jobs, fields, and having to go in and work under these times where folks are not telling them that, oh, yeah, we're concerned for yours. They're telling them the exact opposite. We're trying to send you into New York. Can you leave right now? Like, man. Other folks with observations, questions, comments that they want to make sure they get in. Much obliged, Draptomania. Folks might be satisfied. We have about 10 minutes, a little over 10 minutes left in the broadcast. Again, we'll be here tomorrow for our compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Pacific. Looking forward to that. Dr. Sylvia Hood Washington will be coming through shortly. We just finished up her book, Packing Them In. She all about racism, environmental racism, and health in Chicago. Very much looking forward to her coming by the program later this month. We should have quite a few. Our Global Sunday talk on racism should be back, not this Sunday, but next Sunday. So we will continue our effort to broadcast as much as possible during all of this, hopefully, being constructive, not just wasting time. Did I hear folks had commentary they wanted to share?
Yeah, Gus, if I could just add, you know, caller from New Jersey, with all that just happened within this week, and within this week, it's enough to cram a lifetime in this week. You know, I'm just contemplating, I'm just saying, like, you know, should I have just stayed on unemployment? Should I have went, back to work? That's something that's just, playing in my mind right now. And I'm also just very out of all this week, even everything that happened to me, I can say that I'm just really more disturbed at the reaction. Not disappointed, but just disturbed at the reaction of Black people, how they reacted to the report in my region of the planet, because I'm not sure how anybody else reacted when the report came out, how basically the numbers of corona cases in the Black community and corona deaths. I've just seen this Black people blaming other Black people. I've went on my social media platform and I just basically gave my opinion and suggestions. I never try to talk at Black people. I am in no position to dictate to any Black person, but I just hope I share my experience on a workplace to other Black people to make them let them see that a lot of these cases where Black people are coming in contact with the coronavirus, there is a large number. I don't have the amount, but there is a large number that's coming directly from the workplace. I have friends that's in the correction, that's correction officers, and there's a large number of correction officers that has been affected with the coronavirus. There's reports that 20% of the New York City police workforce is out sick. I'm in New Jersey. We have New Jersey Transit. There's a number of New Jersey and Transit employees that have contracted the coronavirus, the post office, and these are jobs that Black people hold, FedEx, UPS. But somehow some Black people find a way to blame Black people for being victimized. And I think that out of everything I've experienced, that was the most disturbing thing this week, and also the passing of my friend. So those are the two most disturbing things that I have observed this week. And I just don't think that in this pandemic, the Black collective is not going to fare well, health-wise or economically. In my region of the world, though, a lot of people are moving towards a vegan lifestyle that's being heavily pushed among young people that's really being concerned with their health. So, hopefully that trend will follow. And also, I went to the vitamin shop and I tried to pick up some more vitamin C. And all the vitamin C has been wiped out of the vitamin shop and the GNC. So hopefully that trend continues as it relates to, health and well-being of Black people.
Much obliged, caller in New Jersey. That is, we'll probably talk about that tomorrow, the response to the information this week. Blaming Black people is very popular. That was usual suspects. A lot of times will engage in that behavior, blaming Black people, and or promote that behavior of blaming Black people. But yeah, very, very common. I'm sure we will spend some time chatting on that for the compensatory call-in tomorrow evening at 9 p.m. Let's see. Other folks who are with us, if you have comments, questions, we have about 9 minutes left in the broadcast. Anything else you want to make sure you share before we conclude?
Have you heard?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. In Yame, in Nebraska.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to add on a point that you made earlier about the safety, and sometimes they have donuts, you know, recognition for having safe work month. It just so happened that at UPS, they brought in donuts. They give us a 10-minute break halfway through the shift. They brought in donuts. My code is I don't eat anything at work at all, and I surely don't eat anything that white people prepare for me or anyone. I don't know what your kitchen looks like or, you know, how you keep that cooking environment. So I'm hesitant to eat anything. I'm hesitant to eat a lot of things people put in front of me. But I did notice that people had to be told to wash their hands. They were rushing over to the table where the donuts were, and they had to be told, reminded to wash their hands. For those, I usually wash my hands every chance that I get at work because we're handling packages from all over the world, and the place is just filthy. It's filthy. And I noticed the line in the bathroom to wash hands is the longest that I've ever seen it, and that was yesterday. Today, a worker brought in some Krispy Kreme donuts at the end of the conveyor belt that we were working at. And he wanted to share them with everyone. And so that break, he called myself and the other black male across from me over, but I declined, as I usually do whenever someone offers me something. But the black male, he went over there, he got some donuts, you know, and I went to wash my hands. I came back, I seen him eating the donuts. And we got to speak into each other for a brief moment, and I made a point to ask him. I said, did any of those guys who reached in there wash their hands? Can you stop eating the donuts? And he's like, no, I didn't see any of them wash their hands. I didn't see any of them move to go wash their hands. I said, yeah, that's one of the reasons why I don't eat things that people put in front of me. And that's really all I wanted to add. Thanks, I'm
in
my line again.
Excellent code. Excellent code. And look at that. They had back-to-back donut days. He said the employer bought in the donuts the first time around, and then an employee, coworker, brought in donuts the next day. So you just eat donuts every day? That's what I said about addiction. That right there. Can't just be we had donuts and, you know, we'll have them again maybe 6 months down the road. Get them again the next. Addiction. That sugar. Talking about that in Dr. Africa's book. Dr. Lathan talked about that. White sugar. Just eat it all the time. And then everything else with that. We got all the cooties and washing their hands. I even heard that about healthcare facilities. They were talking, this was on like public radio. This wasn't, you know, Alex Jones, some conspiracies. They were saying that they have a hard time making sure that healthcare practitioners are washing their hands regularly anyway. And they were talking about that. I was like, wow, that's all right. Something else good to keep in mind. If you, you know, feel weak one day, if they might bring in some food that you really like. I don't know what it is, but they might bring that in. If you need something, oh, yeah, the hand washing. Cooties. I don't know what their kitchen looks like. Is that something that I really need? Do I need donuts again? Lots of reasons not to eat when they bring it. It's just a raise. How about that? You give everybody a dollar. How much you spent on the donuts? Here's an extra dollar. You know, here's whatever. A gift card to someplace. You can go get whatever you need. You can buy your own donuts or whatever. I mean, anywho, any other commentary folks want to make sure that they get in?
Gus, could I just add something?
Caller in Canada, yes, sir.
I've noticed that up here in Canada, the premier of Ontario, his name is Doug Ford, so he made some kind of deal with the with the people who produce alcohol, like the breweries. So now they're making hand sanitizer instead of alcohol. So, and then I'm like reading about that. I'm starting to see that people are using hand sanitizer as a substitute for actually physically washing their hands with soap. So that kind of concerns me. That's it. I'll mute my line.
I had said the same thing. I think we had one of our listeners that pointed that out some time ago that, you know, soap has not been flying off the shelves. Like, they've taken all the hand sanitizer and toilet paper and yeast, but they left the soap. They said, wash your hands, and, you know, there is no substitute for a quality hand wash. Absolutely. I agree. And, yeah, that's it. Why not that? Why isn't that part of the blame, as opposed to just black people are ignorant and stupid and, you know, whatever the other excuses are, that they've given out inaccurate information, that they haven't done a quality job of informing the public about all of this? Why not that? Why not, you know, as opposed to making sure that people are washing their hands, all this hand sanitizer, like, to make sure that we are not self-contaminating by not, you know, totally removing any possible contamination from our appendages. Our last couple of minutes. Anything else they want to make sure they get in?
Yes, Gus. May I?
Irie in Louisiana.
There was some type of article written a while before this happened. It was last year, about how people admitted that when they go to the gym, they'll get into the swimming pool to wash off instead of washing off. And so many people, you know, on Twitter basically went and admitted that they don't wash their legs. And so I've seen these people in the workplace, at the gym. They don't always wash their hands, and that would explain why soap isn't going anywhere. Also, there's a woman on YouTube, non-white black lady, Isis X, and she said that she had some reports where she went online and posed as a white person. And, you know, they were talking about how the white people were encouraging each other to put saliva on doorknobs, get in food if they did DoorDash and other delivery food options. So, I mean, there you have it. I just wanted to share that. But, yeah, they don't wash their hands.
I think we have... much obliged, Irie. Should have a report covering that for the compensatory call-in tomorrow. Racists plotting to deliberately infect non-white people, black people. But, yeah, why wouldn't that be, you know, to blame? Like, wow, maybe there's something to it. You got, you know, the whole Tuskegee syphilis experiment, Henrietta Lacks, medical apartheid, syphilis with the blame. I mean, it's long line. Of different incidents of chemical and biological, the water in Flint. I mean, lots of different examples. Why wouldn't that be one? As opposed to just black people are ignorant, careless, didn't pay attention, didn't social distance. Again, man, I am certain this weekend in Seattle, ooh-wee, like, if the weather is as nice as is reported, you talk about people not taking this serious. Like, man, I will be checking the newspaper. I'll probably say something about it tomorrow if Saturday is nice. But I strongly suspect they are going to struggle keeping suspected racists in the house this weekend in Seattle. That might be something to keep an eye. Probably in lots of areas. If it's nice, if this is one of those, oh, summer's getting close type of weekends, like, ooh-wee. Check and then see what the response is. We'll be here tomorrow, compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Much obliged for everyone's participation. Hopefully it was worthy of your time and energy this Friday evening. I hope the context of white supremacy in some way helps all of us as we try as best we can to get through this really just confusing, chaotic, and stressful time for so many reasons and all over the world. Just hopefully getting some logic. I think that, too, when it's so difficult to try to make sense of things, and it seems like information is changing second to second, and it's just difficult to get a bearing, that being able to get accurate logic, counter-racist logic, hopefully that can provide a slight bit of soothing lotion, if you will, in these very stressful and dry times. That being said, sobriety would be best, man, oh man, for all of us. Just being stressed and trying to manage things as best we can. The liquor stores are still open. That is not going to help us solve any problems. In addition to being sober, you heard folks already mention, I didn't even bring it up, but you already heard some folks talking about, man, it does not feel as comfy being out on the road when you could be stopped. Where are you going, boy? Are you an essential worker, gal? Let me see your paperwork. I'd be very strategic about when I get in the vehicle, where I'm going, what I'm doing. Just be very mindful. I'd probably heed Dr. Kanban's advice. If you got someplace to go, I'd probably try to get that done early. After it gets dark, I'd probably stay in the house. You don't want to be out and about having enforcement agents out and might be stopping you. Where are you going? Like I said, all the rest that enforcement officials, it could be a white person with a badge, white person without a badge, because they've got a lot of that too. White people snitching on other folks and all the rest of it. And the report about a lot of white people with guns. Now, yeah, you don't have to be fearful about the virus. You should have intelligent fear of racist man, racist woman, racist child. That should be reason to stay in the house or be very codified when you get behind the wheel, meaning you are sober, you are buckled, and you are not on the cell phone. You double check, make sure you got your essential worker permit, our Bay Area mod, you got your DoorDash sign or Uber sign or whatever. So, I'm doing a delivery, you know. Whatever you need to get through, make sure you got all that before you get in that vehicle. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We might need a little bit of extra patience because this is, you know, kind of tough times. Creator, you could help us be patient with ourselves. Help us to get quality rest as well. I've heard from lots of folks because of the disruptions to all this that this has really wreaked havoc on their sleep schedules. Sleep is very important to overall health. Your immune system doesn't work as well if you are not getting quality rest. With that, it has been time. Whew. Replace white supremacy with justice as soon as possible. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.